You're listening to WIN, the Workers' Independent News Service. I'm Jesse Russell.
And I'm Sarah Turner.
The union seeking to organize a printing plant in Kentucky has alleged the company is sickening and maiming employees. The Graphic Communication International Union has filed a complaint with the Kentucky Labor Authorities against Canadian-based Quebecor World. The complaint says that the employees at the Versailles plant are exposed to toxic chemicals, fire hazards, and unsafe machinery with inadequate guards. In addition, workers have filed more than 50 charges of unfair labor practices, including company harassment and intimidation of employees who wish to unionize. African-American workers at the company's Olive Branch, Mississippi plant have filed multiple complaints of racial discrimination. In June, Democratic presidential candidate John Kerry sent a letter to the CEO of the company asking that they respect the right of workers to unionize.
8 states filed a lawsuit in Manhattan's federal district court this week against this country's biggest power plant polluters. American Electric Power, Synergy, the Southern Company, the Tennessee Valley Authority, and Xcel Energy operate over 170 power plants emitting 646 million tons of carbon dioxide each year. The states aren't seeking monetary damages for the serious threats to their citizens' health, economy, and environment that nitrogen and sulfur emissions create. Rather, they want power plants to drastically cut toxic emissions.
Greek paramedics, ambulance drivers, hotel workers, and bus drivers aren't looking for the gold during the Olympics. They just want a bonus. Labor groups in Athens have threatened to go on strike during the games unless their extra effort is given recognition. Police and other security forces have been offered bonuses up to the equivalent of $3,000 American.
Add another 1,200 jobs to the millions lost under the Bush administration, because this week, automaker Mitsubishi Motors announced the elimination of half the shifts at its only U.S. assembly plant. Mitsubishi has lost more than 26% in sales, and it says the cuts are necessary to maintain profitability.
Here's today's Dow Bob Report. American economic growth depends on investment by businesses, and corporate profits are soaring. So why are major U.S. companies hoarding cash? According to Business Week, 374 of the companies in the S&P 500 stock index have some $556 billion in cash stashed away. That's up 11% from last year. In the last 4 years, corporate cash reserves have tripled. Much of that money is ending up in money market funds, where it earns a whopping 1% for its corporate investor and does nothing to create new jobs.
You've been listening to WINS, the Workers' Independent News Service. For more information, visit laborradio.org.
You put in 30 years at the company. You got good pay, health care. Then they send you a job overseas. And under George Bush, the company actually gets a tax break for doing it. Now, Bush says we're in recovery. And after a year, you finally land another job, and you wonder, is this what you worked your whole life for? We're not being led. We're being misled.
Time for another Gooberhead Award. Presented periodically to someone whose tongue is going 100 miles an hour, but who forgot to put their brain in gear. Today's goober is John Cornyn, a little-known U.S. senator from Texas who's trying to become a big name by rewriting the constitutional genius of the founders. Ignorance is a bad quality in a public official, but add arrogance and you've got a dangerous goober on your hands. John's all puffed up with the fumes of arrogance because he's chairman of the Senate's Constitution Subcommittee. The best public service one can offer in this position is to kill politically inspired amendments that other Congress critters are always tossing out, especially in election years. Instead, Cornyn himself has become the premier political posturer, using his position to propose not one or two amendments, but five. For example, he wants to allow members of Congress to be appointed rather than democratically elected in the event that some are killed in a terrorist attack. This has already been overwhelmingly rejected by the Republican-controlled House on the basis that it's undemocratic, unnecessary, and, well, silly. Of course, he also trots out the old right-wing war cry for an amendment banning flag burning, claiming that the 9/11 terrorist attacks necessitate this restriction on the people's right to free speech. In addition, he's pushing one to ban same-sex marriages, an odd assertion of big government power over individuals by a so-called conservative, not to mention that it would make rank discrimination constitutional. My favorite Cornynism, though, is his push for a balanced budget amendment, outlawing deficit spending. This from a guy who has voted for every one of George Bush's budget-busting boondoggles, from Star Wars to tax giveaways for the rich, creating a budget that's now $500 million in the red. If you want a balanced budget, John, just vote for one. This is Jim Hightower saying, what a goober. I'm Jim Hightower, and I've approved this message.
Jim Hightower is not running for office, but he is back this campaign season with an important word about the regime of King George the W.
Let's stop beating around the bush. These people are nuts.
Let's Stop Beating Around the Bush is Hightower's hilarious new best-selling book, offering you unvarnished facts, insight, and humor to get you through this year's political spin cycle. Buy Let's Stop Beating Around the Bush today and make politics fun again. Available at bookstores everywhere and on the web at jimhightower.com. Buy it today.
I'm Jim Hightower, and I've approved this message.
Jim Hightower is not running for office, but he is back this campaign season with an important word about the regime of King George the W.
Let's stop beating around the bush. These people are nuts.
Let's Stop Beating Around the Bush is Hightower's hilarious new best-selling book, offering you unvarnished facts, insight, and humor to get you through this year's political spin cycle. Buy Let's Stop Beating Around the Bush today and make politics fun again. Available at bookstores everywhere and on the web at jimhightower.com. Buy it today.
He's the man who uncovers corporate lies, exposes political corruption, and has a clear vision of what America could become. Here's Tom Hartman.
Greetings, my friends, patriots, lovers of democracy, truth, and justice, believers in peace, freedom, and the American way. Tom Hartman here with you. It's the it's our Friday afternoon segment. There we go. Push the right buttons and everything happens the way it should. Friday afternoon. Just a quick heads up. At the middle of the second hour, I'm going to be heading out of here. Rama Schneider is going to be filling in for me as I've got to teach a workshop down in New York State at Omega. So Rama's got Sybil Edmonds on, the FBI whistleblower, going to be on our third hour of our program, so it's going to be a fascinating show. But I'll be here for the next hour and a half. Tom Hartman with you, and it is Friday. It is time for Brunch with Bernie, Congressman Bernie Sanders. 1991, Bernie Sanders became the first independent congressman elected in 40 years to the House of Representatives. He has since been reelected five times. He is the longest-serving independent in the history of the House of Representatives, a man I consider America's congressman, America's representative, Congressman Bernie Sanders. Welcome, Bernie.
Tom, good to be with you.
It's so great to have you here. A lot happening to this week in the House of Representatives. You guys had a vote a couple of days ago on taking away the right of access to the courts for a particular segment of our population, the way apparently it used to be for black folks.
Tom, it was a huge vote. And I think the issue there is just how extreme the Republican leadership is now in the Congress. And what that vote was about is to prohibit the courts, the federal courts, from ruling on the so-called Defense of Marriage Act, which many people think is unconstitutional. So what they said is basically they will not, that they think they have the right to pass legislation in Congress which could very well be unconstitutional, and included in that legislation is language which says that the Supreme Court cannot review the constitutionality of it.
Yeah, I do.
What
bizarre.
Many people are very fearful of, that this could well go beyond the DOMA issue, Defense of Marriage Act. It could apply to virtually anything.
Yeah.
So you could pass legislation which has A, B, and C, which could be blatantly unconstitutional, and then you put boilerplate language in it which says this legislation cannot be reviewed by the Supreme Court. And in doing that, what you have destroyed is the separation of powers in America, which has one of the ways that has made our country a democratic and great country. And you said we could do anything we want. and the Constitution really doesn't mean anything. Very, very dangerous act by an extremist leadership.
Yeah. Now, by the way, let me just toss in here for our listeners. Congressman Sanders loves to take your phone calls, and I do too. Feel free to call 1-866-889-8894 if you have any questions, thoughts, comments, pontifications, whatever for the day. Bernie, you read the Constitution, and it's clear that the Constitution doesn't give the Supreme Court the right to declare legislation constitutional or unconstitutional. That was a right that the Supreme Court took upon itself in the Mabry versus Madison case in 1803 during Thomas Jefferson's presidency. And Jefferson was very upset about it. He said, if this is allowed to stand, the Constitution has become a thing of wax, and he was concerned about the Supreme Court overreaching. But John Marshall, who was the old Federalist that, Adams' last act when he left as president was to pack the Supreme Court with Federalists, and, well, not his last act, but one of them. And so do you think that it's possible that this court, which is so conservative, might go back and revisit Mabry versus Madison and say, okay, the Supreme Court actually, the Constitution actually doesn't say the Supreme Court can declare legislation unconstitutional. We're going to reverse Mabry versus Madison and allow this piece of legislation that you were talking about, that the Congress just passed yesterday, to stand, and that would be the end of judicial oversight of Congress, wouldn't it?
Oh, I'm not an expert on the area, but I don't think that will be the case. I mean, I think we've had almost 200 years of precedent over here,
yeah,
which says that we have a separation of powers, that Congress cannot do anything that it wants to do without having oversight from a body which is designed to protect the constitutional rights of the American people.
Yeah.
I mean, theoretically, what you can then have is, one vote in Congress can do anything it wants to do, and the piece of paper that we revere as the Constitution of the United States becomes nothing.
Yeah, then you have the mob rule that James Madison warned about in the Federalist Papers.
That's exactly right. And the capability of protecting minority rights. The truth of the matter is minority rights are not always popular, but that's what our Constitution is, right? The right of freedom,
right,
of speech.
Thus,
protect against unlawful seizure and search.
Yeah. Thus, as Ben Franklin said to Mrs. What's-Her-Name as he was leaving the Constitutional Convention, and she said, what kind of government do we have? And he said, a republic, madam, if you can keep it.
Right.
And that's in our chat room, and folks can get to our chat room by just going to tomhartman.com and clicking on the live chat button. Pacecop, the screen name, one of the folks in our chat room, in all caps, says, why don't the other members of Congress yell from the rooftops that the cons want to destroy the Constitution of the United States?
Oh. There was a very heated debate. I mean, people who watch C-SPAN understand that. And many people gave very elegant and I think important speeches. And I think the other thing to point out, in my view, is this particular piece of legislation, which is, again, attacking gay marriage, didn't come up one day before adjournment for the summer recess by accident.
Yeah.
The Republican leadership, in my view, has nothing to say about the decline of the middle class, the growing gap between the rich and the poor. They have nothing to say about a health care system which is disintegrating, about the fact that the new jobs being created in America are paying substantially less than the jobs that we're losing. Nothing to say about the increase in poverty in America. They can't deal with the real important issues facing America. So what they have to do is deflect the tension into those areas where people are feeling anxious. And, sexuality is one of those areas. So it's not an accident that bill was brought up the day before adjournment. And they will go back to their districts and talking about how, gay marriage is going to destroy America and all this other stuff. It's a 100% political ploy. And I would hope that the listeners understand that. People can disagree about, gay marriage and all of that stuff. But if you think about the really important points, really important issues facing our country, is what kind of future are our kids going to have? Are they going to be working at Walmarts and McDonald's, or are they going to have decent paying jobs? Are all Americans going to have healthcare? If people work 40 hours a week, are they going to earn a decent wage? Are we going to destroy the environment and not stop these big corporations from polluting our air, land, and water? Are we going to provide educational opportunity to all people? Those really are the issues. And these guys, the Republican leadership, which is owned by big money interests, can't talk about those issues.
Yeah.
So they're going to try the wedge issues. It will be gay marriage. It will be abortion. It will be guns. It will be religion. You name it. And they're going to hope to split, blacks from whites and gays from straights and men from women and urban from rural and all of that stuff. And that's their game plan, and everybody knows it. I don't believe it's going to succeed, and I certainly hope that that approach does not succeed.
Yeah, I agree. 1-866-889-8894. Let's go to the phones. Jerry in North Carolina is on the line. Jerry, you're live with Congressman Bernie Sanders.
A pleasure to talk with you.
Hi, Jerry.
But from what you know and what you've seen in your years in Congress, and if this law follows its natural conclusion, would you not expect that portion of the law to be declared unconstitutional?
Yes, I would. I surely would. I think the first the Supreme Court or the first court that heard it would laugh it out. That's what I expect.
Except that law says that the Supreme Court can't decide on that law.
No, but it has to be, not yet. It will be, that will go to the courts, whether or not it will go to the courts.
Yeah.
I think that the courts will, it will be certainly appealed, and the courts will hear it, and I think the courts will laugh it out.
Yeah, this just fundamentally contravenes the Constitution. It's crazy. 15 minutes past the hour, 1-866-889-8894, our toll-free telephone number if you'd like to be on the program. Dave in Humboldt County is on the air. Dave, you're live with Congressman Sanders.
Good morning, gentlemen. Bernie, at the risk of appearing a bit crazy, I have been harboring the beliefs and studying the new Pearl Harbor that the White House is far more culpable in 9/11 than we're caused to believe. It should never have been allowed to happen. I don't know what your thoughts are on this, Bernie, but I just think for the second time in our lifetime, there was a Warren Commission report that came out that tried to convince America, and it's a bipartisan commission, that one nutball killed the president from the book depository. Now we have the 9/11 commission out, and it doesn't want to address anything about anything to do with the reality of how our whole military had to go brain dead on that day.
That's a good question, Dave. Bernie, what are your thoughts on the 9/11 commission report here?
I'm not into conspiracy theory. I think what 9/11 exposed is the weakness of our intelligence capabilities. It exposed the fact, I think, and this has been said a million times, that the Bush administration did not properly perceive what some in the intelligence agencies were telling them, that Al-Qaeda was the major threat to America, that we put too much emphasis on high-tech stuff rather than on human resources and getting into the trenches with terrorism. But I'm not much into conspiracy theories. That's my view. So I think that the 9/11, commission did a reasonably good job.
Now, one of the things they pointed out, Bernie, was that the intelligence that George Bush had was showing that Iran was actually a transit point for some of the hijackers of 9/11, and that Iraq had nothing whatsoever to do
That's
with
right.
9/11. Do you think it's possible that we attacked Iraq because George Bush has dyslexia and he mixed up Iraq and Iran?
No, I mean, I think, again, that issue has been gone over quite a lot, and I think there is a widespread understanding that from the very earliest days of the Bush administration, Bush was talking about the need to eliminate Saddam Hussein.
Yeah.
And that 9/11 became a good reason for him to do it. And what remains sad is that even today, despite, once again, this commission saying that there was not a link between Al-Qaeda and Saddam Hussein, we have millions and millions of Americans who believe that Iraq was involved in the attack on 9/11.
Particularly those who listen to Fox News. We got about a minute and a half left here. You just wrote a letter to Rupert Murdoch. Want to talk
That's
about
right.
that?
That's right. What we wanted, Rupert Murdoch is, of course, one of the most powerful people in this world. And he not only owns Fox Television and the New York Post, he owns major book publishing company, a major film company. He owns media all over the world. And this guy is a right-wing billionaire who uses his media ownership to push his right-wing point of view. And what we have sat down and done with dozens of members of Congress is to say to Mr. Murdoch, you say that Fox Television is fair and balanced, but all of the evidence suggests that it leans very, very far to the right, that all of your hosts, virtually all of your hosts, are right-wing, that most of the guests you have are right-wing. that you spend a lot of time attacking progressives and liberals and support the president day in and day out. Give us some fair and balance on your Fair and Balanced Network. And that's what that letter is about. We want to sit down and talk to him about doing that.
Good luck. It'll be interesting to see how that one plays out. 20 minutes after the hour, we're talking with Congressman Bernie Sanders. Brunch with Bernie, 1-866-889-8894. If you'd like to be on the air, we'll be right back.
I guess I better let the dog in.
Like the small dog that rules the house, Small Dog Electronics is a small computer company that really rules when it comes to customer service. Small Dog Electronics is your authorized Apple reseller in Wakefield, Vermont. Sure, you can buy your computer out of a catalog, but how do you know you're really getting what you want or what you need? At Small Dog, they don't work on commission. Their only motivation is making sure you're a happy customer. Put your business on the leading edge with the world's fastest computer, the new Macintosh G5. You'll finish the job ahead of the pack, and automatic security updates lock out viruses. That's speed and dependability that will keep you focused on your customers instead of sitting on hold with tech support.
I guess you want to get on the couch, huh?
Like the small dog who everybody makes room for, Small Dog Electronics is big on customer service. Small Dog Electronics. Check them out on the web at smalldog.com or at their showroom on Route 100 in Waitsfield.
No way. You're not getting on the bed.
I'm sorry, there's nothing more we can do. No one wants to hear those devastating words from a doctor. But that's what millions of Americans suffering from diseases like Alzheimer's, Parkinson's, and diabetes will be told. If you vote for Ralph Nader. Americans who voted for Nader put Bush in the White House in 2000. As president, George W. put the brakes on embryonic stem cell research, which could lead to revolutionary new treatments and cures. John Kerry vows to push this research forward. George W. Bush is still taking orders from the religious right. He wants to stifle stem cell research. This time, don't help him. Don't vote for Ralph. The Committee for the Advancement of Stem Cell Research approved this message. It was not approved by any candidate, nor any candidate's committee. Visit CASCR.org.
At last, there's a positive focus on a condition that affects millions. Read The Edison Gene, ADHD and the Gift of the Hunter Child by Tom Hartman, best-selling author of Attention Deficit Disorder, A Different Perception. John Rady, author of User's Guide to the Brain, says this about the Edison Gene.
Once again, with tireless scholarship and a bit of poetry, Tom Hartman helps take us to the edge of knowing ourselves, our brains, and our world.
The Edison Gene, available in bookstores everywhere.
Here's today's Dow Bob Report. The latest figures from the Federal Pension Benefit Guarantee Corporation say the number of underfunded pension plans dropped last year by 9%. About 1,050 pensions are collectively short some $279 billion, yet the report doesn't paint a complete picture. It only covers pension funds, which are $50 million or more in the red, and conveniently overlooks the massive underfunding that's taken place since 1999.
How can contemporary America possibly compare with 1933 Germany? Find out in Tom Hartman's brand new fully illustrated book, We the People, A Call to Take Back America. Through Tom's concise political analysis and Neil Cohn's vibrant illustrations, you'll observe an unsettling, if not shocking, perspective of America. You'll also hear what the founders of this country did to control corporate power. You'll be invited to consider how the American political system can be made more democratic, as well as comprehend the project for the new American century's vision for America. Here's what syndicated cartoonist Ted Rawl said after reading We the People.
An ambitious effort to explain everything that's wrong in America, how things got this way, and what should be done about it. We the People is the product of a brilliant and principled thinker.
We the People, A Call to Take Back America by Tom Hartman. Available in bookstores everywhere.
Listening to the Tom Hartman Program.
And welcome back. Tom Hartman here with you, 24 and a half minutes past the hour, Friday afternoon. Brunch with Bernie. Congressman Bernie Sanders with us. 1-866, our toll-free number, 1-866-889-8894, if you'd like to be on, if you have comments, thoughts, questions for Congressman Sanders. Here we have Glenn in Tulsa, Oklahoma on the line. Hey, Glenn, welcome.
Hey, Tom. Hi, Bernie. I have a question about, first of all, how many Democrats voted for that ridiculous bill?
Too many, Glenn. I don't remember exactly. Somewhere around 25, I think.
Good grief. You know, how
and
can
about,
they call themselves?
Again, I may be wrong by a few, but I think 13 or 15 Republicans voted against it.
Well, those jellyfish ought to call themselves Republicans and quit pretending. But the 9/11 report, you know, it just seems awfully odd that, you know, already they're starting to drag their feet. You know, they began to drag their feet. Oh, we've got to study this. We've got to look at it. And we don't have time for that. I saw a guy on television, a guy named Larry, security guy who was involved with all
this,
talking about CIA and the military in Iraq having a meeting just last month. An FBI guy walks in, and the CIA guy says, if he's here, this meeting is over. Now, that's not cooperation.
No, you're absolutely right, and that has been endemic for many, many years, and that's something that we've got to deal with. We're all on the same side on this issue. We can't spend billions of dollars on this agency and that agency and people not talk to each other and cooperate. That has been one of the most serious problems facing our intelligence agencies.
Yeah, it's a tough one, and it goes back to the Watergate era. And, of course, the cons are all trying to blame Jamie Gorelick for it when, in fact, she was actually trying to reduce the level of uncooperation, increase the level of cooperation. And Ashcroft pulls that red herring out, and now all the right-wing talk show hosts are talking about it. It's bizarre. Anyhow, Ken and Warren, Michigan's on the line, 1-866-889-8894. Hey, Ken, welcome to the program. Ken in Warren, Michigan? Oh, maybe Ken is not there. Yeah, we've lost Ken. Bernie, you on your website, which is bernie.house.gov, which is one of the best websites out there for information on what's going on in the Congress, you have this top 10 insults that Greenspan has made against the American worker. And I imagine you don't have it right in front of you, but it's just absolutely remarkable. In here, you've got Greenspan saying that he's in favor of abolishing the minimum wage.
Absolutely. I asked them that question, and that's what he said. What I think in terms of Alan Greenspan, what people perceive is, well, you got this kind of erudite, knowledgeable, boring, moderate economist who's very, very smart and so forth and so on. And he's respected widely by both parties because Clinton appointed him and Bush appointed him and so forth and so on. The truth is, Alan Greenspan is an extreme right winger who holds an Ayn Rand view of the world, which means the government should play virtually no role at all. And when he is asked to comment on the role the government should play, always it is to favor the wealthy and the powerful at the expense of the middle class and working families. Some years ago, he came before the committee, and that is what I asked him. I said, well, I understand a little bit of your philosophy where you believe the government should play very little role. What is your view on the minimum wage? Would I be correct in assuming that you want to abolish it? He said, well, actually, yes. In other words, according to Greenspan, and in fact, many Republicans here in the House, if you can create a situation where unemployment is high enough, people are desperate enough, and a worker has got to work for $2 an hour, and an employer pays them $2 an hour, hey, that's the relationship between an employer and a worker. Government should not intervene and have a minimum wage. And I suspect his views on union rights are not all that different. On free trade, just the other day, and I didn't get a chance to ask him questions because other people hadn't asked them previously and they were in front of the line, he continues, incredibly enough, to talk about all of the great benefits that unfettered free trade have brought to the United States. He is living in another world, in a country club world, in a world of the wealthy and the powerful. He refuses to acknowledge the fact that we have lost almost 3 million decent-paying manufacturing jobs, that our technology jobs are beginning to hemorrhage as well, and that the new jobs that are being created are low-wage jobs with minimal benefits. So he is really there as a spokesman for the wealthy and the powerful, and it's quite an outrage.
Yeah, it really and truly is. 29 minutes past the hour. I see Ken and Warren, Michigan's back on the line. 1-866-889-8894 if you'd like to call. Ken, hang on. We'll pick up your call right after this. We'll be right back.
For more than 27 years, the progressive magazine In These Times has provided groundbreaking coverage of movements for social, environmental, and economic justice. Author and broadcast personality Studs Terkel calls In These Times his bi-weekly tonic. In These Times features award-winning reporting and analysis of national and international news. Find In These Times on your newsstand or visit us online at www.inthesetimes.com or call 1-800-827-0270. 1-800-827-0270.
Pop and not-so-pop culture, democracy, and the news of the day. This is the Tom Hartman Program.
You're listening to WIN, the Workers' Independent News Service. I'm Jesse Russell.
And I'm Sarah Turner.
The union seeking to organize a printing plant in Kentucky has alleged the company is sickening and maiming employees. The Graphic Communication International Union has filed a complaint with the Kentucky Labor Authorities against Canadian-based Quebecor World. The complaint says that the employees at the Versailles plant are exposed to toxic chemicals, fire hazards, and unsafe machinery with inadequate guards. In addition, workers have filed more than 50 charges of unfair labor practices, including company harassment and intimidation of employees who wish to unionize. African-American workers at the company's Olive Branch, Mississippi plant have filed multiple complaints of racial discrimination. In June, Democratic presidential candidate John Kerry sent a letter to the CEO of the company asking that they respect the right of workers to unionize.
8 states filed a lawsuit in Manhattan's federal district court this week against this country's biggest power plant polluters. American Electric Power, Synergy, the Southern Company, the Tennessee Valley Authority, and Xcel Energy operate over 170 power plants emitting 646 million tons of carbon dioxide each year. The states aren't seeking monetary damages for the serious threats to their citizens' health, economy, and environment that nitrogen and sulfur emissions create. Rather, they want power plants to drastically cut toxic emissions.
Greek paramedics, ambulance drivers, hotel workers, and bus drivers aren't looking for the gold during the Olympics. They just want a bonus. Labor groups in Athens have threatened to go on strike during the games unless their extra effort is given recognition. Police and other security forces have been offered bonuses up to the equivalent of $3,000 American.
Add another 1,200 jobs to the millions lost under the Bush administration because this week, automaker Mitsubishi Motors announced the elimination of half the shifts at its only U.S. assembly plant. Mitsubishi has lost more than 26% in sales, and it says the cuts are necessary to maintain profitability.
Here's today's Dow Bob Report. American economic growth depends on investment by businesses, and corporate profits are soaring. So why are major U.S. companies hoarding cash? According to Businessweek, 374 of the companies in the S&P 500 stock index have some $556 billion in cash stashed away. That's up 11% from last year. In the last 4 years, corporate cash reserves have tripled. Much of that money is ending up in money market funds, where it earns a whopping 1% for its corporate investor and does nothing to create new jobs.
You've been listening to WIN, the Workers' Independent News Service. For more information, visit laborradio.org.
This is the Tom Hartman Program.
And welcome back. 26 and a half minutes before the hour. Give me some shelter from these cons, these conservatives. My, they're destroying the American middle class. Absolutely. The conservative, when you understand the conservative agenda boils down to two words, cheap labor, it all becomes obvious. It's Brunch with Bernie, our Friday afternoon segment. Congressman Bernie Sanders with us, America's independent congressman. Our toll-free number, if you would like to call and be on the air, ask questions, make comments, whatever, 1-866-889-8894. And now let's try Ken in Warren, Michigan again. Ken, you're live with Congressman Sanders.
Okay. Thank you very much, sir. Congressman, I'd like to ask you a question. On 9/11, as I understand it, and I haven't heard anything to the contrary, there was no interceptor aircraft of any service, Air Force, Navy, Marines, that went up to intercept those airliners that were strayed off from the established flight plan to go into the trade towers and the Pentagon. And I was wondering why. I hadn't heard nothing as to the reason why there was no aircraft. Nothing's been said.
I think that's a good question,
Kenneth. Is it something hidden away or what?
I don't have all of the details in front of me now, but I think at the very least there was miscommunication. Nobody took responsibility, and people acted much too slowly. And I think that is certainly one of the problems that was discussed by the commission. But you're right. Planes were not out there as by any means, quite obviously, as quickly as they should have been.
Yeah, there's still, in my mind, a lot of unanswered questions here. And well, we'll see. I mean, this commission is actually going to hold together for another year, and a year from now issue another report. And of course, the congressional inquiry is going to issue a second report after the elections about the White House and their activities. So.
Well, in terms of this whole discussion, you know, there are obviously two important issues. And number one is what happened to 9/11? Why didn't we do better? Which is part of what Ken's question is. But even more importantly, how do we prevent another attack like that from happening again?
Yeah. Amen. Well said. 1-866-889-8894. Kerry in Illinois. Where in Illinois are you, Kerry?
Down to Carpentville.
Okay, great. Welcome to the show. What's up?
Bernie, I have a question I have real quick. Is they say we need another $12 billion for the military. First part of my question, how much will that make the total cost of the war? And second part, what would $12 billion do to No Child Left Behind, or maybe the Agriculture Farm Bill? Thank you.
Good question.
Kerry is making a very important point, is that this war is costing us a lot more than the president indicated that it would, and it is going to cost us more in the future. So when we talk about the loss of 900 lives and we mourn that reality, 5,000 wounded, let us not forget that we've already spent over $150 billion and that cash register is clicking away more and more money. Meanwhile, all over the United States, there are enormous needs out there. Our veterans can't get into the VA hospital because of lack of funding for our veterans' needs. As this caller indicated, No Child Left Behind is grossly underfunded, which means that local school districts are strained. We need to be putting money into our cities and towns all over this country and not just into Iraq. And that's why I think an increasing number of Americans, including myself, believe we've got to get out of Iraq as quickly as we can. We've got to do our best. There are no good answers out there. What we're looking for is the least bad situation. But I think we've got to get out there as soon as feasible.
Yeah, well done. 1-866-889-8894. Bill in Illinois is on the line.
Yeah, I had I was listening to Bernie talking about Greenspan, and for the last 25 years, I've been in the finance industry and watched the, I believe it was 15 years of double-digit Fed fund rate, and how it took basically every conceivable asset and wealth out of the middle class and threw it into the elite. And, I mean, I've just watched it happen. It's pathetic. Everybody's living on credit now. Nobody has, you know, hard assets any longer. And I guess my question to Bernie is, what about setting a cap on the Fed fund rate from now on? I mean, a reasonable one, not like 15%, but like 3%.
Well, that's something to think about, Bill, but I think Congress has got to be a lot more active in dealing with the Fed than we have in the past. And what I can tell you, because I'm on the Financial Institutions Committee, it is incredible to me how members of both parties have historically regarded Greenspan as some kind of royalty, rolling out the red flag and thanking him for the sun shining in the morning. But I think your point is well taken. I think Congress has got to be a lot more vigilant in dealing with these type of issues. And frankly, I think the evidence, as you've just indicated, is overwhelming that this guy, in everything that he does, whether it is Social Security, whether it is interest rates, whatever it is, when he speaks out, he is speaking out for the wealthy and corporate America and not expressing a lot of concern for the middle class. One of the outrages that we put on our website, Tom, which is bernie.house.gov, is this guy who supported Bush's huge tax breaks for the wealthy, then came back and said, well, you know, surprise, surprise, we have a huge deficit, a huge national debt, and you know what we're going to have to do? We may have to raise the Social Security retirement age. We may have to lower the COLA for our senior citizens. Tax breaks for the rich, cutbacks in Social Security, and that's the Greenspan line.
Yeah, and yeah, it's outrageous. 1-866-889-8894. Mike in Florida is on the line. Hey, Mike, welcome to the program.
Good afternoon to both of you. Bernie, the Army's calling up recruits early. They're asking the guardsmen to stay beyond their commitment. The little coalition we had put together seemed to be fed up with this farce, and now we're talking about Iran. Does Congress realize the seriousness of the situation now if something were to happen abroad or at home?
Well, I think, Mike, you're suggesting that the military is stretched out in an almost unprecedented way, and that Iraq has wreaked havoc on our military. And as you've indicated, we're seeing 55-year-old National Guardsmen fighting in Iraq.
There was a 67-year-old guy called up the week before last, Bernie. 67 years old. He was a psychiatrist.
So to answer Mike's question, yes, I think, I mean, there are a couple of issues here with regard to Iraq. You know, should we have gone in the first place? The answer, in my view, was no. But one of the criticisms, major criticisms of Rumsfeld and Bush and friends, is that the evidence is very clear that they did not anticipate what would happen. I think they thought of a quick victory, flowers being thrown out by the Iraqi people, bringing our troops back home. And obviously, there has been a tremendous exhaustion of our military. And as Mike indicates, our people are stretched out very, very thin. Morale is very low. To answer Mike's question, yes, many of us in Congress are aware of that.
Okay. Thanks, Mike, for the call.
Thanks for your efforts.
Yep. 1-866, you're welcome. 1-866-889-8894. Our telephone number, Harry in Ann Arbor, Michigan, listening on WSDS. Hey, Harry, what's up?
Hello, Bernie.
Hi.
Hi, Bernie.
Yes, how are you, Harry?
Yeah. I'd like to suggest how Congress can help in democratizing Iraq. The unemployment in Iraq is 70%. And until the people, Iraqis, get jobs, there's not going to be any democracy. Congress can get the immigration service to limit the passports of the Halliburton people going over to Iraq so the Iraqis can get the jobs of driving truck and everything else that they're capable of doing. And that would help a lot.
Well, I think, Harry, you make a good point in that until we improve the living conditions of the people of Iraq, there will continue to be, I think, a lot of disappointment and anti-Americanism in that country. And one of the key problems is very high unemployment. And in fact, there is a lot of criticism that the money that was allocated for Iraq, for the rebuilding of Iraq, has not been distributed terribly effectively, and it has not gotten into the hands of Iraqi workers who are more than capable of rebuilding their own country. So the point you're making is a good point, and I think that's pretty widely understood.
Yeah, and when you consider that, you know, we're paying Halliburton about $250,000 a person so that they can pay salaries of $150,000 to $200,000 a person to get people over there to drive trucks. Plus, they've got to have their markup and their guaranteed profit. And the average Iraqi, the average middle-class Iraqi, makes about $500 a year, and they want to work for us. We could hire them. I mean, it's just and so many people say this insurgency is driven by unemployment in Iraq. I mean, it's just crazy. Excellent point. Let's move along. David in Santa Fe, New Mexico, is on the line. Hey, David.
Hey, Tom. How are you?
Great.
Bernie, there was a guy on Tom's show about a week and a half ago named Larry Klayman who said that it's an open secret in Washington, D.C. that we know there's a few suitcase nukes floating around inside the United States. I haven't heard anything else from anybody about this. There's nothing on Klayman's website about it, and I wondered if you had any more information on that.
Nope. I don't.
Yeah.
It's not an open secret. I don't know if that's true or not true.
Okay.
Just don't know.
Thanks for the call, David. Alan in Missouri is on the line, 1-866-889-8894, our telephone number. Alan, welcome. You're live with Congressman Bernie Sanders.
Yes, I was wondering who benefits from the Nathan.
Can you, Alan, you're going to have to speak up a little bit. It's coming through kind of garbled.
Yes, I was wondering who benefits from the nation's debt. Could it be their Federal Reserve Board?
Who benefits from the nation's debt?
Yes.
Yeah.
Well, one of the groups that benefits from the nation's debt are a lot of people outside of the United States of America who increasingly own that paper. And that is a real concern about the future of this country, that a lot of our debt is not owned by Americans but by people who are not American citizens.
Yeah, isn't it also, I mean, you've got the like the Bush family and the Kennedy family, I mean, to be bipartisan about this, who basically earn their living by sitting around the pool waiting for the dividend check to show up or the interest check on their treasury bonds. I mean, they do other things, of course, as well. But for that kind of labor, they only have to pay a 15% income tax, and they don't pay any payroll tax under the new Bush tax cuts. They're benefiting
right.
from that,
that's
too.
That's right. These tax cuts of Bush have certainly gone to benefit those folks, and as opposed to the needs of working families.
Yeah, yeah, and in fact, if you own, I don't own any treasuries, but I think if you own treasuries, isn't the income the interest income tax-free?
I should know that, and I don't.
Yeah, see, neither one of us are rich enough to invest in treasuries.
That's right.
Okay.
What about the Federal Reserve Bank?
What about the Federal Reserve Banks, David? Or Alan wants to know.
How do they benefit from the debt?
Yeah.
I can't give you a good answer.
Yeah. Thanks, Alan, for the call. It's
Thank you.
Yeah, this is one of those things that gets really complicated. You know, my eyes just cross when I try to get into this stuff about the Fed but speaking of the Fed, you know, Alan Greens, and by the way, our lines are open if you want to call in 1-866-889-8894. And Alan Greenspan, his support of deregulation. Bernie, can you speak?
Sure.
This is such a buzzword on the right. It's like they've actually made deregulation into a positive phrase.
A religious mantra, like unfettered free trade, and
yeah.
People should understand what the implications of that are about. To my mind, if you look at the history, Tom, over the last 100 years, what it has been is a struggle for human rights in America, and we've had many, many successes. And the successes are manifested in the fact that if you're old now, you know what, you're on Social Security, and that means you're not going to be living on the street when you're 80. And you have Medicare. And if you're in a union, you have the right to negotiate, your right to form a union. And if you're a low-wage worker, at least there is a minimal wage. And we, as citizens of this country, have some protection against people who pollute. They just can't throw their garbage all over our land, our air, and our water. And that's what the struggle of the last 100-plus years has been about. And what these guys want to do, under the guise of, among other things, deregulation, is take away the ability of the people to protect themselves from those people who have the money and the power. And what they want to do is bring us back to the 19th century, where these folks on top can do anything that they want to do. In other words, if they want to pay a worker a dollar an hour, hey, that's deregulation. Let's get rid of the minimum wage. They want to dump all of their garbage and their toxins into our lakes, into our rivers. Hey, let's do that. We don't want regulation of polluters. Unfettered free trade. We don't want to protect American workers. Let's go out there and compete against people who make 30 cents an hour in China. We don't want to regulate that.
Yeah, the robber earns
it. Public education. Oh, we don't want public education, do you?
Yeah.
We want to go back to the 19th century. Only the rich families could give their kids a good education.
Yeah.
So if you look at this issue from one end to the other, it is an extremely radical vision back into the past.
Yeah, back to the McKinley
administration. Where people had very little rights.
Yep, absolutely. Let's go to John in Northern California on the line, 1-866-889-8894. John, you're live with Congressman Sanders.
Hi, how are you guys doing today?
Great.
Good.
Hey, I don't know, it's my impression that these neocons basically want to bankrupt the U.S. government, then the
the benevolent corporations can step in and take over all this stuff and basically take away the Constitution. I mean, as it is now under the way the corporations work, I mean, you have to give up your Fifth Amendment right because you have to take a drug screen before you go to work for them for a minimum wage job and things like that. I mean, they get around so many laws by being corporations and not having to deal with a criminal aspect of things.
Yeah.
Well, John makes a very good point. And the issue here is, and I want people to think about this, generally speaking, conservatives believe in fiscal responsibility. Why is Bush driving up the deficit in the national debt by tax breaks for the rich? And the answer is, if you bankrupt the government, then you can get back to the point that Tom made a moment ago. My goodness, we can't afford Social Security or Medicare or Medicaid or public education.
Right.
We've got to give it all up.
There you go. And walk away from it. We've got to take a break here, Bernie. We'll be right back. It's 10 minutes before the hour.
How can there be hope when millions starve in a world of plenty? How can there be justice when the rich parade their wealth before the poor? How can there be peace when each man is his neighbor's enemy? In a world of chaos, peace is possible, but only if we address the root causes of our global crisis, poverty, hunger, and despair. We must share the world's resources to create justice. Without justice, there can be no peace. Fortunately, we're not alone in our efforts. According to futurist Benjamin Krem, a group of enlightened teachers led by Maitreya, the world teacher, is here to inspire a new approach based on the principle of sharing. With their guidance, we can transform the world and create a peaceful future for all. For a free audio CD of an extraordinary lecture by Benjamin Krem on the emergence of the teachers, call toll-free 888-242-8272. Again, that's 888-242-8272.
Hi, this is Tom Hartman. Join me this October as we explore Greece, the ancient birthplace of democracy. When the Founding Fathers were searching for the best and fairest form of government, they studied the models of Athenian democracy. We'll explore together this part of the ancient world where the ideas that today animate modern democracy were first worked out. This journey is set on the shore of the sparkling Mediterranean Sea with the sacred mountains of Crete behind us. We'll visit the ancient site of Gortian, famous for the Law Code of Gortian, large 6th century BC tablets of stone built into a wall and one of the first examples of laws ever written down and now the oldest still in existence. I'll teach workshops at the two most important sites in all of Crete, Knossos and Phaistos, plus more. At Knossos, we'll experience the main ceremonial center and the palace of King Minos. For information on how you can join us on this trip of a lifetime, visit www.tomhartman.com or call 1-800-234-TOUR. That's 1-800-234-TOUR, T-O-U-R.
Tom Hartman will be speaking out in Santa Fe, New Mexico with We the People, a call to take back America, a Friday evening talk August 27th at the Santa Fe Armory for the Arts, to be followed by a Saturday, August 28th workshop called Waking Up to Personal and Global Transformation. Tom Hartman brings his wit, wisdom, and intelligence to Santa Fe the weekend of August 27th and 28th. Tom Hartman will discuss with us how America faces its greatest threat since a civil war. And Tom Hartman will look at how Western thinking, legends, and myths have caused global problems and endangered democracy and what we can do about it. To get your tickets and more information, call 505-988-2223 in Santa Fe. That's 505-988-2223 or visit greatmystery.org. Tickets for Tom Hartman are also available at Collected Works Bookstore in Santa Fe.
A leading environmentalist says a growing gap between haves and have-nots is at the root of international terrorism. I'm Steve Pomplin for Earthwatch Radio. Resentment is on the rise around the world, according to Paul Ehrlich, and it's directed at the world's wealthiest societies. Ehrlich and his wife Anne have written a new book called One with Nineveh. It argues that the growing gap between rich and poor countries is driving terrorism.
9/11 should have been more than catastrophic enough to open our eyes to dealing with the roots of terrorism. After all, we live in a world where something like 3 billion people live on $2 a day or less, while the average European cow is subsidized to a tune of $2.50 a day.
Ehrlich says he's not justifying acts of terrorism, but he says we should figure out what drives it. Most of the people drawn to terrorist groups come from desperately poor communities in places like Pakistan.
The basic root of terrorism, of course, is that many, many people are getting educated in poor countries but have no prospects for decent livings, and there are even more people who are not educated who basically just feel desperate and see the vast wealth of the rich countries, and that tends to enrage them.
Ehrlich says it's in our own interest to help fight poverty and disease in developing countries.
The gap between the rich and the poor, which is growing in the United States and between nations in many cases, is something we all should be concerned about, because remember, not only are the poor more susceptible to diseases that can move to us, but of course they also are now armed with nuclear weapons, with biological weapons, with chemical weapons, and so they are able to make lots of trouble for us, even if we thought it were ethical for us to continue to live high on the hog while they starve.
That's Paul Ehrlich, author of the new book, One with Nineveh. Earthwatch Radio is a service of the Gaylord Nelson Institute and the Sea Grant Program at the University of Wisconsin.
This is the Democracy Zone with Tom Hartman.
I'm going crazy.
Welcome back. 4.5 minutes before the hour. Tom Hartman with you. It's Congressman Bernie Sanders, Brunch with Bernie, and we've got several callers here, Bernie. We'll try and get through them real quickly. We'll start out with Dave in Columbus, Ohio. Dave, welcome. You're live with Congressman Sanders.
Hey, Tom and Bernie. Nice to talk to you guys.
How you doing, Dave?
I got to tell you, you guys are torturous. The generalities you're spouting about conservatives are just so totally wrong. I don't even know where to begin.
Okay, well then don't. Thanks a lot, Dave. I appreciate it.
No, Tom.
Okay.
Dave, make your point quickly.
Actually, I got two other callers here, and I just moved along. So
okay.
I'm sorry, Bernie.
You know.
Chuck in New Mexico is on the line.
Yeah, Congressman, I have an interesting conundrum here. There were about a half a dozen of us that started a company, and we decided that we would divide up the stock, and the whole thing's, you know, a shoestring operation. We're making some initial sales. The thing is that if we've got to pay ourselves a minimum wage, then we're not competitive, even though we all agree that we're basically gambling, I guess, on the future of the company, and we all agreed that we would work for stock rather than cash. And, you know, to me, that's one of America's really amazing things, is that you can start companies like that, but at the same time, we can't pay ourselves minimum wage. Kind of weird.
That's fine, Dave, but I mean, that's a very different circumstance. I mean, you guys are getting together to start a new business. We wish you the best of luck, but that's very different than somebody going to work in a field in Arizona or California being paid $2 an hour by a large grower or a rancher, isn't it?
Yeah, but it's illegal for us not to pay ourselves.
Of course it's not illegal. And if you own the company, you don't have to pay your people.
Yeah.
Millions of people are, you know, taking risk right now and not making any money. They're going into debt.
Dave, you're not covered by the minimum wage laws. Chuck, I'm sorry. You're okay. Not. I can tell you.
I didn't know that because in New Mexico, I think we are.
No, you're not. You're absolutely not.
You're the owner of the business. You don't have to pay yourself the minimum wage.
You don't have to worry about it. 1-866-889-8894, Jeff in Denver, Colorado.
Since we have a little time, Bernie.
Yeah, got about a minute.
Like, since we're always talking about people making a difference and making change, how did you get involved in this, and what was the path, like, especially given that you were an independent and didn't have the support of an organization?
Well, I started running as a third-party candidate. I got to tell you, the first two times that I ran for statewide office, I got 2% of the vote and 1% of the vote. But you know, that's true. So if you're persistent, you go out and you talk to ordinary people. You knock on doors. I think that is the path to political success.
Yeah, very straightforward.
And is this the first office you've held?
Mayor of the city of Burlington, Vermont. And I won that by 10 votes.
Yeah, that's great. Jeff, I know Jeff is getting active in the Democratic Party there in Denver, too. So it's good luck on you, Jeff. Thank you. And Bernie, we've got about 30 seconds here. Final thoughts or words for our listeners?
Well, the final thought today is the final thought at every program. This election coming up is the most important election, certainly in the modern history of this country. It is imperative that all people who are concerned about what's happening get out. Talk to people who don't always agree with you. Knock on doors. Let's see if we can create a new beginning for America.
Great. Congressman Bernie Sanders, thanks so much for being with us today.
Thank you, Tom. Bye-bye.
Yeah, bye now. It's the Tom Hartman Radio Program, your light at the end of the tunnel of talk radio.
You've been listening to the Tom Hartman Program. Check our website at www.tomhartman.com for archives of this program and more information.
founding fathers thought they'd stop corporations from ever overthrowing elected government. Little did they know that 200 years later, democracy would be stolen and twisted in the name of so-called conservative values. Hi, this is Tom Hartman. The founders of America fought the Revolutionary War against the excessive corporate power of the East India Company, and presidents from Jefferson to Eisenhower warned us that extremely big businesses could destroy democracy. You'll find this extraordinary American story in my book, Unequal Protection, The Rise of Corporate Dominance and the Theft of Human Rights. It starts with the Boston Tea Party and ends with the rampant corruption of the Bush administration. It tells the dramatic story of how corporations hijacked the Bill of Rights, setting the stage for the CEO takeover of America. And it shows how we can take America back and tells the stories of Americans from Pennsylvania to California who are doing just that right now.
Unequal Protection is available in bookstores nationwide. And you can read several chapters online at unequalprotection.com. That's Unequal Protection.
Pop and not-so-pop culture, democracy, and the news of the day. This is the Tom Hartman Program.
You're listening to WIN, the Workers' Independent News Service. I'm Jesse Russell.
And I'm Sarah Turner.
The union seeking to organize a printing plant in Kentucky has alleged the company is sickening and maiming employees. The Graphic Communication International Union has filed a complaint with the Kentucky Labor Authorities against Canadian-based Quebecor World. The complaint says that the employees at the Versailles plant are exposed to toxic chemicals, fire hazards, and unsafe machinery with inadequate guards. In addition, workers have filed more than 50 charges of unfair labor practices, including company harassment and intimidation of employees who wish to unionize. African-American workers at the company's Olive Branch, Mississippi plant have filed multiple complaints of racial discrimination. In June, Democratic presidential candidate John Kerry sent a letter to the CEO of the company asking that they respect the right of workers to unionize.
Eight states filed a lawsuit in Manhattan's federal district court this week against this country's biggest power plant polluters. American Electric Power, Synergy Southern Company, the Tennessee Valley Authority, and Xcel Energy operate over 170 power plants emitting 646 million tons of carbon dioxide each year. The states aren't seeking monetary damages for the serious threats to their citizens' health, economy, and environment that nitrogen and sulfur emissions create. Rather, they want power plants to drastically cut toxic emissions.
Greek paramedics, ambulance drivers, hotel workers, and bus drivers aren't looking for the gold during the Olympics. They just want a bonus. Labor groups in Athens have threatened to go on strike during the games unless their extra effort is given recognition. Police and other security forces have been offered bonuses up to the equivalent of $3,000 American dollars.
Add another 1,200 jobs to the millions lost under the Bush administration because this week, automaker Mitsubishi Motors announced the elimination of half the shifts at its only U.S. assembly plant. Mitsubishi has lost more than 26% in sales, and it says the cuts are necessary to maintain profitability.
Here's today's Dow Bob Report. American economic growth depends on investment by businesses, and corporate profits are soaring. So why are major U.S. companies hoarding cash? According to Business Week, 374 of the companies in the S&P 500 stock index have some $556 billion in cash stashed away. That's up 11% from last year. In the last 4 years, corporate cash reserves have tripled. Much of that money is ending up in money market funds, where it earns a whopping 1% for its corporate investor and does nothing to create new jobs.
You've been listening to WINS, the Workers' Independent News Service. For more information, visit laborradio.org.
You put in 30 years at the company. You got good pay, health care. Then they send your job overseas. And under George Bush, the company actually gets a tax break for doing it. Now, Bush says we're in recovery. And after a year, you finally land another job, and you wonder, is this what you worked your whole life for? We're not being led. We're being misled.
The League of Women Voters has long been a voice of reason and moderation in American politics. But the leaders of the League recently received a searing blast of raw outrage directed at them, coming from a surprising source, their own members. From all across the country, angry LWV members fired off calls, emails, and several shrieks of horror at the hierarchy, decrying a decision the leaders made last year to endorse the use of paperless electronic voting machines in our elections. Since that endorsement was made, there's been a growing awareness that these corporate-owned and operated computer voting systems are wide open to hackers, manipulations, vote theft, and other problems. Indeed, California authorities have banned the use of machines provided by Diebold, Inc. after finding unauthorized software in them and experiencing malfunctions that jeopardize the outcome of elections this spring. Most alarming is the fact that electronic voting provides no paper record of each ballot cast, so there's no way to track the integrity of the vote in case there are suspicions of tampering or miscounts. As a result, there's been a fast-spreading grassroots rebellion against entrusting our democratic electoral process to the handful of corporations that program and supply these treacherous machines. The demand is that the devices must include a verifiable paper record of every vote cast. The League of Women Voters has now joined this rebellion. At its recent biannual convention, some 800 delegates from its local chapters voted overwhelmingly to rescind their leader's earlier endorsement of paperless voting machines. They passed a resolution demanding voting systems and procedures that are secure, accurate, recountable, and accessible. This is Jim Hightower saying, it's a testament to the integrity of grassroots groups like the League that they can inform themselves and correct their course. Now, if only our corporate and political leaders would do the same, maybe we'd get a little integrity back in our electoral process.
When I started this company, our mission was to be the most useful and most ethical provider in the financial services business.
Charles Schwab, founder and chairman of the Charles Schwab Corporation.
When you're dealing with people's money, when you're dealing with their financial dreams, you've got to hold it with the greatest of care.
With industry-leading equity research, trusted investment professionals, and online equity trades as low as $9.95, Charles Schwab offers investors a better choice when it comes to low-cost investing.
It's about service. It's about best value. It's about ethics. It's all those things. That's what we're about every day.
To learn more about Schwab's new lower-cost trading options, call 1-800-7-SCHWAB or stop by a local branch today.
For pricing details, visit Schwab.com. $9.95 for Schwab Trader CT clients or those with $1 million in assets. Advice and certain research available for a fee. Charles Schwab & Co., Inc., member SIPC and NYSE.
And radical return to the old values that made America great, the values of democracy on which this country was founded. Here's Tom Hartman.
And welcome back, my friends. Tom Hartman here with you for the first half hour of this hour. At the bottom of the hour here, I'm going to be heading out. I've got to give a speech tonight down in New York State. And Rama Schneider is going to be filling in. In fact, one of the folks in our chat room, he says, Rama arrived early, Benedict at large. Is he wearing his dress? I'll let Rama answer that for you. No, Rama doesn't wear a dress. I should make it pretty clear. Anyhow, new citizens say, I really have to fear that. I'm going to turn this show over to this guy, and I just set that up like that. Anyhow, new citizens say GOP took away their right to choose. This a story out of Jacksonville, Florida. And, you know, again, one of these things that doesn't get much national press. And, by the way, our phone number, 1-866-889-8894, the website, tomhartman.com, however you spell it, you'll get there. You want to drop into the chat room, it's alive and buzzing. Just click the live chat button, it'll take you there. And you, too, can make comments about me or Rama or anybody else. And of course, our message board link is there. And where I'm going to go in just a minute is something that was actually posted on our message board. You can find it, a letter from Osama bin Laden. But before I get to that, Dario Cruz, this is a story from the Jacksonville, Florida newspaper. Dario Cruz has lived in the United States for 16 years, but just became a citizen last week as he and 200 other immigrants were naturalized. One of the things the newspaper in Jacksonville writes, one of the things he always wanted to do was register to vote. And when he was offered a chance to register to vote right after his naturalization ceremony, as he was walking out of the building, right, he goes into the federal building, he raises his right hand, he swears the oath of allegiance to the United States, he signs on the dotted line, boom, you're a citizen, young man, and he walks out the door, and there's somebody standing there who says, would you like to register to vote? And he says, of course, I'd love to. And they hand him the form, you know, the federal form, and he fills it out. And down at the bottom, there's this box that says, which primary, you know, what? How do you want to register? As a Democrat, a Republican, or an independent? And mystery of mysteries, the box labeled Republican was already checked. Pre-filled in. Cruz says, it's like one side. You don't get to choose. According to his Cruz and his family, every form that was passed out was checked off Republican. His wife, Linda Cross, first noticed. She said she asked what was going on and was told the woman registering votes said they were a Republican organization. Now, oddly, Linda Cross is a Republican. She says, I'm a Republican, but I was very angry with that. If they want to register whatever party, you shouldn't try to dictate to people what party they're going to register, who they're going to vote for, because then you don't have any freedom. The immigrants sort of understand this, see. The couple left without registering. But Cross, the wife of Dario Cruz, says these new citizens that were coming out and maybe did not know much of what was going on were all registering as Republicans, not by choice, but by someone else's choice. So the newspaper asks the head of the local Democratic Party in Jacksonville, Florida, a guy named Clyde Collins, if he knew about this. And he's like, no, I didn't know this was going on. He says, it's not right. He says, first of all, it violates your fundamental right. You have a right to decide which political party you wish to enroll. And Cruz agrees. He says, I think you should be able to choose who you want to vote for. For the record, the Channel 4 notes, newsforjax.com, this is Channel 4 in Jacksonville, Florida. For the record, any registered voter can vote for any candidate in any party in a general election, but in most primaries in Florida, people can only vote for candidates of their own party. Remarkable. Okay, I got a note here from David. Another Dave in Humboldt County. This is a Dave who hasn't called into the program. And by the way, if generally the best way, if you want to reach me, the best way to reach me is to post things on our message board. You can send me an email, tom@tomhartman.com, although I generally don't reply to the emails. I occasionally will read one on the air. But I'm buried in these things. So anyhow, Dave says, great program. I listen every day. He says, I think it was last week that you gave a caller a free book for suggesting the Bush's bill to increase penalties for identity theft was proposed for the general benefit of the citizenry rather than for corporations. Now, just to fill you in, we've been running a contest for months now. I mean, this goes back to, it might have even been last year, but I think it was early this winter. We had Congressman Tom Tancredo, the Republican from Colorado, as I recall, on the program, and we were talking about immigration, but just kind of in a side note, I asked him, Congressman Tancredo, can you please, being a good Republican, can you please name for me one piece of legislation that the Republicans have put forward and has been signed into law that primarily benefits we the people instead of corporations? And he was unable to answer, it wasn't like a trick question or anything. It was a sincere question, you know. It seems to me, Congressman, like your party has been taken over by corporate interests. Please demonstrate to me that I'm wrong. And he, after a little bit of sputtering, he said, well, what about the anti-abortion legislation? I was like, well, it didn't pass, so that doesn't count. And there are many who would say that wasn't to the benefit of we the people, but that's a whole other argument. But in any case, so we've been running this contest, and I've been telling people for half a year now, I'll give a free copy of my new book, We the People, A Call to Take Back America, to anybody who can call in and say that they have identified a piece of legislation that the Republicans proposed and Bush signed into law that benefits people over corporations. And a couple of weeks ago, there was a woman whose name at the moment I forget who called and said, what about the identity theft law? And I said, okay, that's a good one, and I gave her a book. Well, Dave begs to differ. He says, granted, identity theft is hard on the individual in terms of the paperwork and related expenses required to get one's account straightened out, but it's usually the vendor or the credit card company, not the folks who have their identity stolen, who end up taking the credit card losses. And, you know, I had completely forgotten about that. If somebody steals your credit card or steals your identity and runs up thousands of dollars on your credit card, by law, you're only responsible for the first $50. There are a few different state laws, but there are also federal laws about this. Either the first 50, the first ones who eat it with identity theft. And the businesses that take the credit card losses, not the folks that have their identity stolen. I don't think for a second that W would do this for us unless it protected his base, the millionaires and billionaires. And then he says, keep up the good work, but be careful about giving those books away. I have to buy mine. And signs it another Dave from Humboldt County. Well, good point, Dave. And I sent him, in fact, I sent him back an email saying, well said, I wish I'd thought of it at the time. Every now and then, you know, something just kind of slides by. And it is so great having such educated, insightful, thoughtful, erudite listeners and, you know, folks in our chat room who just, you know, keep me straight on these things. And, in fact, let's talk to one right now. 1-866-889-8894. Telephone number, Ed in Utah is on the line. Hey, Ed, where in Utah are you?
West Valley. It's not far from Salt Lake City.
Ah, okay, great. What's up?
Well, listen, Tom, can I shift back to the Bush's war of terror?
Sure, please.
Okay. I want to ask you if you're familiar with the Washington-based newspaper, the American Free Press.
I am not.
I wish you would look them up. I'll tell you why, Tom. I want to level with you. I'm a man who voted for Pat Buchanan. And if you will, I'm on the populist right. But I'm finding that many people that I guess would consider you on the populist left, we have a lot of values in common. I've noticed this now.
Yeah, the populist part is shared, I'm sure.
Yeah, and kind of where I'm going with this, I brought up the American Free Press, and there's a 27-year FBI man that is their Nevada bureau chief. He was number two man behind Hoover at the bureau, Ted Gunderson. And the reason I bring this up is that one of their columnists, along with Ted Gunderson, a guy by the name of Michael Piper, he also has a book out, The High Priest of War. And what's going on here is that when you, you know, like even this Sandy Berger situation that happened, in The High Priest of War, he connects, Michael Piper does, people such as Rupert Murdoch of the Fox Network, which cheered this war on right from the get-go, Tom.
Sure.
He connects them to Richard Pearl and people like Doug Feith, who interestingly is here he is in the administration, and he's now working with Mark Zell and the Chalabi family on post-war contracts.
Well, and also Feith was the guy who put together the Office of Special Plans, which was the parallel CIA processing intelligence on Iraq office that was set up in the Pentagon to hand-feed, you know, cherry-picked intelligence to Dick Cheney
Tom?
Yeah.
The reason I bring up this book, The High Priest of War, I'm hoping with your reason, the way you get to the bottom of things and discussing, and I'm not saying you would have to agree with Michael Piper on everything, but I think that you would find him interesting as a guest. Now, I recommend that because he has gone like nobody else. All the highly touted books in the major media, they're not getting down to a final point. He is basically going after the Israeli lobby in this, as others have, like Richard Pearl, Wolfowitz. How can this be denied? They're all there. Doug Feith is a strong Israeli firster. It's supposed to be our foreign policy, not a foreign policy that they can manipulate by paying off people like the Bush-Cheney crime family, paying them off with oil contracts, which is exactly what happened. And Piper makes the point that these two forces cut their deal and came together. And it explains the Israeli murmurings you're hearing in the background.
Well, Ed, if I can interrupt you for just a second, I know that there's a number of virulently anti-Semitic newspapers out there that are on the essentially what you call the populist right. And yeah. My problem with this, and you know, I have a lot of issues with Israel's foreign policy, frankly, but I think that it's really important to distinguish between Israel and the current leadership of Israel. And I think that a lot of people fail to do that. I mean, Ariel Sharon is actually, you know, never got a majority vote in his own country. He has, you know, he's pulled together a coalition. So, you know, using that one word, Israel, I mean, for anti-Semites, it's like, you know, oh, it's the Jews kind of thing, you know. And that's very, very destructive kind of language. On the other hand, I think, you know, it's really important that we make this distinction that there's, you know, Israel is a very complex situation. And the whole thing in the Middle East is it goes beyond just Israel, although it's a big part of the problem is the Israel-Palestinian conflict. I mean, this has to be resolved. In fact, I'll talk about it a little bit after this break. Ed, thanks for raising that. I appreciate the call. I got to go here. We got to take a break. But I appreciate the call, and feel free to call in anytime. 20 minutes past the hour. It's the Tom Hartman radio program. Uncommon Sense from the Radical Middle, helping you win the water cooler wars.
I guess I better let the dog in.
Like the small dog that rules the house, Small Dog Electronics is the small computer company that really rules when it comes to customer service. Small Dog Electronics is your authorized Apple reseller in Wakefield, Vermont. Sure, you can buy your computer out of a catalog, but how do you know you're really getting what you want or what you need? At Small Dog, they don't work on commission. Their only motivation is making sure you're a happy customer. Put your business on the leading edge with the world's fastest computer, the new Macintosh G5. You'll finish the job ahead of the pack, and automatic security updates block out viruses. That's speed and dependability that will keep you focused on your customers instead of sitting on hold with tech support.
I guess you want to get on the couch, huh?
Like the small dog who everybody makes room for, Small Dog Electronics is big on customer service. Small Dog Electronics. Check them out on the web at smalldog.com or at their showroom on Route 100 in Waitsfield.
No way. You're not getting on the bed.
I'm sorry, there's nothing more we can do. No one wants to hear those devastating words from a doctor. But that's what millions of Americans suffering from diseases like Alzheimer's, Parkinson's, and diabetes will be told if you vote for Ralph Nader. Americans who voted for Nader put Bush in the White House in 2000. As president, George W. put the brakes on embryonic stem cell research, which could lead to revolutionary new treatments and cures. John Kerry vows to push this research forward. George W. Bush is still taking orders from the religious right. He wants to stifle stem cell research. This time, don't help him. Don't vote for Ralph. The Committee for the Advancement of Stem Cell Research approved this message. It was not approved by any candidate, nor any candidate's committee. Visit CASCR.org.
At last, there's a positive focus on a condition that affects millions. Read The Edison Gene, ADHD and the Gift of the Hunter Child by Tom Hartman, best-selling author of Attention Deficit Disorder, A Different Perception. John Rady, author of User's Guide to the Brain, says this about the Edison Gene.
Once again, with tireless scholarship and a bit of poetry, Tom Hartman helps take us to the edge of knowing ourselves, our brains, and our world.
The Edison Gene, available in bookstores everywhere.
Here's today's Dow Bob Report. 20% of Iraq veterans who were in at least 5 firefights are suffering from post-traumatic stress disorder, according to a new study by the New England Journal of Medicine. PTSD is debilitating, causing headaches, sleeplessness, hypervigilance, and depression. The disorder has plagued a total of 12.6% of soldiers returning from Iraq, and the chances of suffering from it only increases with the amount of time spent in combat zones.
In the foreword to Tom Hartman's book, The Last Hours of Ancient Sunlight, The Fate of the World and What We Can Do Before It's Too Late, renowned author Joseph Chilton Pierce writes,
"To discover brilliant, innovative, creative, and original thinking is one of life's rare privileges. To discover that such a thinker has focused on the most critical of all issues facing our species is encouraging. Because The Last Hours of Ancient Sunlight is a seminal work offering a viewpoint original yet ancient, I see our situation today in a new light. And because of the scope and depth of this work, I find it inspiring as well as disturbing. I rather exhausted superlative in praise of Tom Hartman's book, The Prophet's Way, which I rightly called the most important book I've ever read. But now I find this sequel calling for equal praise, since the issue here addresses the whole of our species, and indeed all species.
The Last Hours of Ancient Sunlight, The Fate of the World and What We Can Do Before It's Too Late by Tom Hartman, in bookstores everywhere.
Fearlessly exploring the truth of the day, here's Tom Hartman.
Please allow me to introduce myself. I'm a man of wealth and taste.
And welcome back. 24 and a half minutes past the hour. Tom Hartman here with you. And yesterday, George Bush made a speech which was broadly carried. CNN, they even interrupted Crossfire to carry part of it, in which he said to the people that were assembled there, he said that the reason, of course, he was talking about Iraq, so he starts out talking about 9/11, which has nothing to do with Iraq, but, you know, he always tries to connect these two in people's minds at a subliminal psychological level. And he starts out by saying, the people who attacked us on 9/11, or words to this effect, the people who attacked us on 9/11 attacked us because they hate our freedoms. And then he says, but we're not going to change anything. And that was the punchline. It got a big applause. And can you imagine, I mean, here's a couple of guys sitting around in Afghanistan after they've successfully, using American CIA money and training and weapons, repulsed the Russians, the Mujahideen and Al-Qaeda that we funded and helped create in Afghanistan. We put Osama there during the Reagan administration to throw out the Russians, right? And they succeeded, by the way. And they're sitting around, and, hey, we just got rid of those Russians. Now let's see, what shall we do? Let's see. In America, they let people vote, and they let women drive cars, and, it's just terrible. We shouldn't allow that to happen. Let's go bomb them because they're free. Somehow I think not. Although there may be some small element to it, but it wouldn't be that they hate us because of our freedoms. It would be because they hate us because of our either secularism or religion. Now, actually, it could be both. And here's where I'm going with this. I have here a letter to America that was written by Osama bin Laden, published on Sunday, November 24th, 2002, in the Observer of London. And it's been around for, it's been floating around for a year and a half. Pretty widely regarded as real and solid. And he starts out, some American writers have published articles under the title, On What Basis Are We Fighting? In other words, asking the question, why did Al-Qaeda attack us? He says, here we wanted to outline the truth as an explanation and warning, hoping for Allah's reward, seeking success and support from Him. While seeking Allah's help, we form our reply based on two questions directed at the Americans. One, why are we fighting and opposing you? Two, what are we calling you to do, and what do we want from you? Then he answers his own question. He says, the reason why we're attacking you is, number one, because you attacked us and continue to attack us. And then subset, A, you attacked us in Palestine. And he goes through the whole thing. And this is why Bill Clinton was working so hard to try to bring peace between Israel and the Palestinians, peace to the Middle East. B, you attacked us in Somalia. You supported the Russian atrocities against us in Chechnya, the Indian oppression against us in Kashmir, and the Jewish aggression against us in Lebanon, says Osama bin Laden. Bin Laden continues, under your supervision, consent, and orders, the governments of our countries, which act as your agents, attack us on a daily basis. He's talking about Saudi Arabia and whatnot. These governments prevent our people from establishing the Islamic Sharia, using violence and lies to do so. You steal our wealth and oil at paltry prices because of your international influence and military threats. This threat is indeed the biggest theft ever witnessed by humankind in the history of the world. And then he goes on to say, Allah the Almighty legislated the permission and the option to take revenge. Thus, if we are attacked, we have the right to attack back. Whoever has destroyed our villages and towns, we have the right to destroy their villages and towns. And, he goes on and on. Whoever has killed our civilians, then we have the right to kill theirs. And then he says, what do we want you to do? In addition to stopping our foreign policy, he wants us to forswear immorality, no more fornication, homosexuality, intoxicants, gambling, and trading with interest. He's opposed to our banks, gays, and alcohol, I mean, and gambling. Right? So, but that's, those aren't, he says, those are the things he says we should do. But the reason he says he attacked us is basically because of our foreign policy. Why doesn't George Bush just own up to this? Anyhow, this is Tom Hartman. Thanks for listening this week. I've got to go. Rama Schneider is going to step in here right after this break and fill the shoes and desk and whatnot here. And I'll see you next Monday. For more than 27 years, the Progressive magazine In These Times has provided groundbreaking coverage of movements for social, environmental, and economic justice. Author and broadcast personality Studs Terkel calls In These Times his bi-weekly tonic. In These Times features award-winning reporting and analysis of national and international news. Find In These Times on your newsstand or visit us online at www.inthesetimes.com or call 1-800-827-0270. 1-800-827-0270.
Pop and not so pop culture, democracy and the news of the day. This is the Tom Hartman Program.
You're listening to WIN, the Workers' Independent News Service. I'm Jesse Russell.
And I'm Sarah Turner.
The union seeking to organize a printing plant in Kentucky has alleged the company is sickening and maiming employees. The Graphic Communication International Union has filed a complaint with the Kentucky Labor Authorities against Canadian-based Quebecor World. The complaint says that the employees at the Versailles plant are exposed to toxic chemicals, fire hazards, and unsafe machinery with inadequate guards. In addition, workers have filed more than 50 charges of unfair labor practices, including company harassment and intimidation of employees who wish to unionize. African-American workers at the company's Olive Branch, Mississippi plant have filed multiple complaints of racial discrimination. In June, Democratic presidential candidate John Kerry sent a letter to the CEO of the company asking that they respect the right of workers to unionize.
Eight states filed a lawsuit in Manhattan's federal district court this week against this country's biggest power plant polluters. American Electric Power, Synergy, the Southern Company, the Tennessee Valley Authority, and Xcel Energy operate over 170 plants emitting 646 million tons of carbon dioxide each year. The states aren't seeking monetary damages for the serious threats to their citizens' health, economy, and environment that nitrogen and sulfur emissions create. Rather, they want power plants to drastically cut toxic emissions.
Greek paramedics, ambulance drivers, hotel workers, and bus drivers aren't looking for the gold during the Olympics. They just want a bonus. Labor groups in Athens have threatened to go on strike during the Games unless their extra effort is given recognition. Police and other security forces have been offered bonuses up to the equivalent of $3,000 American.
Add another 1,200 jobs to the millions lost under the Bush administration because this week, automaker Mitsubishi Motors announced the elimination of half the shifts at its only U.S. assembly plant. Mitsubishi has lost more than 26% in sales, and it says the cuts are necessary to maintain profitability.
Here's today's Dow Bob Report. American economic growth depends on investment by businesses, and corporate profits are soaring. So why are major U.S. companies hoarding cash? According to Business Week, 374 of the companies in the S&P 500 stock index have some $556 billion in cash stashed away. That's up 11% from last year. In the last 4 years, corporate cash reserves have tripled. Much of that money is ending up in money market funds, where it earns a whopping 1% for its corporate investor and does nothing to create new jobs.
You've been listening to WINS, the Workers' Independent News Service. For more information, visit laborradio.org.
Bringing democracy to the United States of America, here's Tom Hartman.
We stand, divided we fall, and if our backs should ever be against the wall. We'll shoot you. No, your back's against the wall. We're going to shoot you. Democracy, my rear end. Rama Schneider in here for Tom Hartman and the Tom Hartman Radio Show. That's right. Ain't no democracy here now. It's gone. Hey, Tom!
We're taking it back.
Tom, you forgot your dress. And your garters. Actually, Tom wanted to hang around. He went to the bathroom. I nailed the door shut, so he can't get out now. Bye-bye. There he goes. Anyway, all right. What do we got? Okay. Hey, substitute teachers in, 1-866-889-8894. The only thing I'll boot you out of the way for coming up at the top of next hour, Sybil Edmonds. I guess you could call her a FBI whistleblower, but she's got a story to tell, and we'll wait and talk to her. And it's a very intriguing and important story, especially in light of some recent events that have been taking place, such as a 9/11 commission report that was put out, and also a recent intelligence committee, well, or should we say, intelligence-less committee report that was put out by the United States government. All right, so here's what we're going to do. I'm going to start to run down some things because there's some stuff in front of me that I believe are really important. And this is kind of open microphone time for you. So once again, 1-866-889-8894. If I sound a little harried or harassed or whatnot, it could be. We're going through some really bad financial times around the household. Personal finances, not corporate finances, although corporate and personal finances being one and the same for me. So we were sitting down at the kitchen table this morning, and the wife, myself, and our daughter. And we were wondering how to handle our personal finances, and we kind of came to the conclusion, everybody, whether you're a business or a human being, you kind of have one of two ways to increase your income, so to speak, in an offhand way. One way, of course, is to go out and earn more money, but seeing as that entails more effort on my part, it's something I'm rather, reticent to do. The other way, of course, is to reduce expenses, and that's what we were working at around the kitchen table this morning. And I was trying to find ways of, here's the thing. There's kind of this hot babe lives down the road from us and a really well-behaved kid that lives up the road the other way. And I was figuring maybe I could outsource the wife and the daughter. Why put up with all the expense of keeping them at the home if I can just... When I need a wife, I can just kind of use the wife from down the road. Or if I need a kid, I can get the well-behaved kid up the road the other direction. I don't have to feed the things, you know. They're out of the way when I don't want them, right? It made sense to me. Of course, the wife and the daughter had some serious objections to that one. What they wanted to do was to have me get a few less benefits from the household and work a little bit harder. They wanted me to basically sleep outdoors, eat grain with the horses, and chew hay with the horses and stuff. So we're still in the process of negotiating this one out to see what we can work out. And I suspect in the long run we'll come up with a really great answer, which is going to solve so much in our household and do so much wonders for our world, in that I'll probably sleep outdoors and get to eat in the house and I work more, and they'll only come live in the house like part-time or so. But it makes sense to me. I mean, I'm just following whatever these people like Alan Greenspan, et cetera, are saying. You know, this whole concept of, look, outsourcing is great, you know, and being a male is, I can think of, no, you know, what's wrong with outsourcing a wife? You know, you can change them at will. It's less expensive to keep and all that. But that's finances, you know. So we were sitting down talking about finances, and you know, it can be depressing at times, right? When you talk about money, it can be awful darn depressing. So this is why I sat down, and after being totally depressed over the prospect of having to sleep out in the barn and eat horse food, here's a meritorious mention, and I mean this in the best way. I know Tom has talked about Costco before. This is from a Seattle Post-Intelligencer news article from July 21st titled Costco-Walmart Duel in Political Arena. And this isn't kudos to Walmart, by the way, and it's nothing to Walmart, but just to read a little bit of the article. Executives at Costco Wholesale Corporation and Walmart Stores Incorporated, competitors in the $76 billion U.S. warehouse club market, have taken their rivalry to a new level in national politics. Costco Chief Executive Officer Jim Senegal, 68, is a Democrat who says President Bush's $1.7 trillion in tax shifts to our younger folks, of course they call it tax cuts in the article, but we'll forgive them for misprint. Anyway, this guy, Senegal, says it unfairly benefits the wealthy. He opposed the war in Iraq, supports Senator John Kerry of Massachusetts for president, and he's the only chief executive of a company in the Standard & Poor's 500 index to donate money to independent political groups formed to oust Bush. Internal Revenue Service records show. Walmart, the world's largest retailer and owner of Sam's Club warehouse stores, gives more money to Republican candidates than any other company does. Its top three managers, including Chief Executive H. Lee Scott, donated the individual maximum $2,000 to Bush, and Jay Allen, Vice President for Corporate Affairs, raised at least $100,000 to reelect the president, earning him the Bush campaign's designee of Pioneer. Walmart, two-thirds of whose 3,580 stores are in the, quote, red states that voted for Bush in 2000, is backing White House policies on everything from trade to limiting overtime pay. Costco, on the other hand, is considered a friend to labor. And it's easy to see why. I mean, Costco offers comprehensive health insurance to most of its 78,000 U.S. employees. Walmart's health plan for its 1.3 million U.S. workers kind of reaches fewer than half of Walmart employees. Costco wouldn't have to raise salaries with Kerry's medical payment proposals to increase their minimum wage to $7 an hour from $5.15. It already pays hot dog vendors as much as $16 an hour. Now get this, the lowest wage that Costco pays is $10 an hour. That's higher than the $9.96 average wage paid at discount stores bearing the Walmart name. That's the lowest wage. Hot dog vendors at Costco earn $16 an hour, and the lowest wage it pays is $10 an hour. So, no. Obviously, when John Kerry, his proposal to raise, as pitiful small as it is, the minimum wage to from $5.15 an hour to $7 an hour, it won't affect Costco. But when you have an average $9.96 an hour being paid at Walmart, you can bet that there's people that are down under that $7 an hour range. Walmart has no unions, about one-sixth, which is better than nothing, if Costco's workers are represented by labor groups. And incidentally, Costco's doing just fine. So, you know, Senegal, they're the CEO, makes no apologies for Costco's policies, is saying higher wages reduce employee turnover, which lowers training costs. I'm not a social engineer, he said in an interview. Paying good wages is simply, wow, good business. How about that? Huh? How about that? So maybe, it's kudos to Costco. You know, they deserve the kudos. They deserve the congratulations. They deserve the pat on the back. So maybe tomorrow morning, if I'm allowed to sit at the kitchen table with the wife and the daughter after my rather unseemly comments to them this morning and my stated desire to. I guess it's not smart to look at the wife and the daughter first thing in the morning and tell them that you kind of want to outsource them to save a few bucks, you know? So it just, I don't know. Who's on the phone here? Philip from Tampa. How you doing, Philip?
Okay. Listen, I wanted to give you an eyewitness report about the first Kerry Edwards rally that we had here in St. Petersburg. It occurred about 24 hours after the announcement that Edwards was going to be the next vice president.
Okay.
And it was at a hall in St. Petersburg, and about, I don't know, maybe 200 or 300 of us couldn't get in because it was filled. We were out basically on the sidewalk in the street.
Were you wearing anti-Kerry T-shirts?
There were 25 of those people across the street that the police separated. They were Bush admirers, and some of them were actually wearing shoes.
No, come on.
Yeah.
All right. So anyway, you guys are outside.
And the ones that weren't were counting on their toes.
Okay. So they weren't letting you in with Kerry, but it wasn't because you were wearing anti-Kerry T-shirts,
no,
right?
No, the place was mobbed.
Oh.
But here's the most interesting thing.
Okay.
I would say, and I was there when it ran out, when people came out and everything out. I would say, gosh, I would say 70% of the people who came were under 30.
Yeah.
And I think that's...
Under 30.
I think that's very telling.
That's Generation X, 13th generation.
Yeah, and a lot in their you know, early 20s.
Yeah.
You know,
How did they
this
react?
This is a group that traditionally doesn't even vote.
Yeah, no, they generally, they've been pretty apolitical.
And if this is a sample of what's to come in terms of support, I think this is really good news.
Yeah. Well, I think it's important, too, because I'll tell you, Philip, one thing I noticed from talking politics with a lot of younger folks is generally the answer is they don't participate.
Right.
And it's because they just really at that point, and it's not a generational thing so much as an age thing. It seems like from the 18 to about 25, 26.
Right.
Yeah, you tend to get these answers that, well, you know, I really don't care. They're not talking about things that are important to me or I won't make it. I don't think it's that they're being lazy. Because the same people that would say that would also go out and do work in the community. But, yeah, I agree with you. I think the fact that they're getting engaged and being interested is a great sign.
I think it's in, you know, if Florida is, you know, foretells what's going on in the rest of the country, you know, I think this is very, very, very important towards winning. Now, subsequent to, you know, the rally and the speeches being over.
Right.
They came out to the front where we were. They came out of some Chevy Suburbans, and Kerry shook hands for, I don't know, a good 15 minutes or so.
Right. Oh, good for him.
And he could have, I mean, I'm sure he was very tired. You know, they could easily have just taken off and gone, you know, get something to eat and lay down. But, you know, he was out there.
Yeah.
And, you know, and it was something. I didn't see, you know, although they had the anti-Kerry demonstrators out there, I didn't see any wealthy-looking people.
Yeah. Well, it doesn't matter anyway, you guys. Your machines are all fixed anyway. You're going Bush. Doesn't matter how you guys vote.
Well, you know, I wish I could disagree with you.
I don't know how,
you know, Jeb could permit the state of Florida to go, you know, for Kerry. Now, it was interesting. I don't know if people are aware of it, but I want to give you an idea of the priorities that the Republicans have for education. You said something about substitute teachers.
Yeah, that's me.
Do you know what you need in the state of Florida to be a substitute teacher?
I have no idea.
GED.
Okay.
That's it.
If you're looking for a bad reaction from me, you won't get one. I'll give you a secret about.
You know, wait. You know what the state pays?
$5 an hour.
$5.30 an hour.
No kidding. Yeah, up here.
And because they have very few substitute teachers because the pay is so poor, you could be a GED person, okay?
Yeah.
And you could probably work every day of the week.
Yeah.
So in other words, you could teach school with only a GED.
Well, yeah, but let's remember.
Now, they may reduce it even further, to, you know, if they can't get enough substitute teachers, they may reduce it further to eighth grade education.
Well, you know, it's...
And then maybe just finishing elementary school.
How many teachers... First of all, I come into my very basis on how I feel about education. I hesitate to use the word believer, but I happen to think that educational choice as opposed to school choice is the way nowadays we need to go. And I realize there's all sorts of discussion involved with that, but that's where I come from.
I don't know what that means.
Well, a long time ago, I talked to a gentleman who was up here in Vermont. Boy, I wish I could remember his name now, but he talked to me about not even making school mandatory, to make education a voluntary thing. And this was an educated guy. He knew what he was talking about. So, look, I'll tell you what, Philip, I got to let you go. We're coming up on a break here.
Okay.
So I'm going to carry on with this when we come back, because it's a very interesting thing, education and choice and how much we're spending and all, because I think there are better liberal answers out there. Thanks a lot, Philip. Rahm Schneider in for Tom Hartman on the Tom Hartman Radio Show.
How can there be hope when millions starve in a world of plenty? How can there be justice when the rich parade their wealth before the poor? How can there be peace when each man is his neighbor's enemy? In a world of chaos, peace is possible, but only if we address the root causes of our global crisis, poverty, hunger, and despair. We must share the world's resources to create justice. Without justice, there can be no peace. Fortunately, we're not alone in our efforts. According to futurist Benjamin Krem, a group of enlightened teachers led by Maitreya, the world teacher, is here to inspire a new approach based on the principle of sharing. With their guidance, we can transform the world and create a peaceful future for all. For a free audio CD of an extraordinary lecture by Benjamin Krem on the emergence of the teachers, call toll-free 888-242-8272. Again, that's 888-242-8272.
Are George Bush's policies getting you down? Have you had enough of Bush's messianic militarism? Does John Ashcroft's assault on the Bill of Rights scare you? Do you believe that Dick Cheney had his conscience surgically removed 3 decades ago? Are you angry at the Iraq fiasco that was the brainchild of Deputy Secretary of Defense Paul out of his Wolfowitz? Well, then subscribe to the Progressive magazine. You'll get the insights of Barbara Ehrenreich, the inspiration of Howard Zinn, and the mirth of Molly Ivins, Will Durst, and Kate Clinton. They'll help you survive this dark age. And check this out. You can subscribe today for only $12 for 12 monthly issues. Simply get on the web and go to www.progressive.org or call 1-800-827-0555 and mention offer radio. That's 1-800-827-0555 and mention the radio offer from the Tom Hartman Program. That's The Progressive. It's your antidote to reactionary policies.
Tom Hartman will be speaking out in Santa Fe, New Mexico with We the People, a call to take back America, a Friday evening talk August 27th at the Santa Fe Armory for the Arts, to be followed by a Saturday, August 28th workshop called Waking Up to Personal and Global Transformation. Tom Hartman brings his wit, wisdom, and intelligence to Santa Fe the weekend of August 27th and 28th. Tom Hartman will discuss with us how America faces its greatest threat since a civil war. And Tom Hartman will look at how Western thinking, legends, and myths have caused global problems and endangered democracy and what we can do about it. To get your tickets and more information, call 505-988-2223 in Santa Fe. That's 505-988-2223 or visit greatmystery.org. Tickets for Tom Hartman are also available at Collected Works Bookstore in Santa Fe.
With the Workers Independent News Service, I'm Sarah Turner bringing you today's feature story. Recently, a group of workers gathered in the Garment District in New York City to launch the Ain't I a Woman campaign, a national boycott against Liberty Apparel, Rebecca Miles was there.
The campaign demands that the manufacturer be accountable to their subcontracted workers. In 1999, 26 garment workers sued Liberty Apparel for sweatshop conditions in their U.S. contracted factories and failure to pay minimum wage. Many workers, when paid, were earning $3 an hour. Anna Chong from the Ain't I a Woman campaign.
It's been 5 years. For 5 years, they still refuse to pay their workers. Their kids are grown and they have not received a single cent. By not paying these workers, they're actually trying to change the law. They're actually trying to change the Fair Labor Standards Act. And because this will affect workers across the country, this boycott is also about holding all manufacturers accountable and all companies that subcontract accountable, and for them to stop hiding behind the subcontracting system.
What concerns workers is the increase in subcontracting, especially where subcontractors are not accountable when accidents happen on the job, or where the company suddenly disappears when there is any kind of protest, as in the case of Liberty Apparel and its subcontractor. David Ting, a high school student whose mother worked long hours in a nail salon.
The subcontracting system is now limited to the garment industry. White-collar workers such as lawyers and paralegals are employed through temp agencies, and although they are well paid, they have absolutely no control of their working hours and may work for years without contract.
We were unable to contact Liberty Apparel Company as the line was constantly busy. Their clothing line is sold in outlets like Conway and Family Dollar for families on tight incomes. And ironically, is durable clothing for workers and hunters. For the Workers' Independent News Service, I'm Rebecca Miles in New York.
Listening to the Tom Hartman Program.
All right, welcome back to the Tom Hartman Radio Program. Rob Schneider sitting in for Tom Hartman in the beautiful, somewhat, well, cloudy, certainly foggy, drizzly, wet, hot, humid Vermont. So, you know, if you're going to pick a better day to come up here, do it tomorrow in the next couple of days. It's supposed to be really wonderful. All right, real quick, Philip had called up, actually. He wanted to talk about all the people, and very ingratiatingly, too, he wanted to tell us about the younger folks that were showing up at Kerry and Edwards' first campaign stop down in Florida right after Kerry had named Edwards as his officially as his running mate. But we started talking about education, and I was saying that, look, I come from the basis of being in favor of educational choice. I don't accept the fact that government should define what it is that we as individuals need to know. Now, yeah, we can all sit down in a room full of people and reach 90% agreement, which is a pretty darn good level of consensus. Reach 90% agreement that at a minimum you need to know some math up to a certain level. I think up through algebra is probably a minimal. You need to know how to write well, read well. You need to know some sciences, right? I mean, you should be at least have some familiarity with physics and with biology, history, the whole nine yards. But the problem when the government tells us what we need to know is we usually discover we need to know something totally different. And what happens, let's say, George Bush gets reelected and the radical right takes over this country. And believe me, there's an example that other folks can give you if the radical left took over that would fall under the same general argument here. And they decided to, well, we're going to make it a national program that we're going to start teaching creationism, as in some literal interpretation that the world was created, 55, 7500 years ago, whenever. And that's mandatory. That's what you will teach. What do we do under a situation like that? Well, we have to rebel if you want to teach your kids something else, like, I don't know. How about evolution? All right. How about if you want to teach your kids evolution? You got to rebel. in order to be able to do that. I don't think parents should be put in a position of having to rebel to get an education for their kids. I think parents should be able to focus on the education and say, look, they need the reading, the writing, the math, the sciences. And then maybe some kids, like I did when I went through high school, need carpentry classes. Other kids need classes that are going to prep them to go on to medical school. You know, there's a whole wide variety of options and opportunities. We can't stay stuck in this public education system that, as Woodrow Wilson once defined it, where you have the ability for a few upper echelon people to get a very good liberal arts education and the rest of the masses to be given this very basic worker-type education so that...
Fathers thought they'd stop corporations from ever overthrowing elected government. Little did they know that 200 years later, democracy would be stolen and twisted in the name of so-called conservative values. Hi, this is Tom Hartman. The founders of America fought the Revolutionary War against the excessive corporate power of the East India Company, and presidents from Jefferson to Eisenhower warned us that extremely big businesses could destroy democracy. You'll find this extraordinary American story in my book, Unequal Protection, the rise of corporate dominance and the theft of human rights. It starts with the Boston Tea Party and ends with the rampant corruption of the Bush administration. It tells the dramatic story of how corporations hijacked the Bill of Rights, setting the stage for the CEO takeover of America. And it shows how we can take America back and tells the stories of Americans from Pennsylvania to California who are doing just that right now.
Unequal Protection is available in bookstores nationwide, and you can read several chapters online at unequalprotection.com. That's Unequal Protection.
Pop and not so pop culture, democracy and the news of the day. This is the Tom Hartman Program.
You're listening to WIN, the Workers' Independent News Service. I'm Jesse Russell.
And I'm Sarah Turner.
The union seeking to organize a printing plant in Kentucky has alleged the company is sickening and maiming employees. The Graphic Communication International Union has filed a complaint with the Kentucky Labor Authorities against Canadian-based Quebecor World. The complaint says that the employees at the Versailles plant are exposed to toxic chemicals, fire hazards, and unsafe machinery with inadequate guards. In addition, workers have filed more than 50 charges of unfair labor practices, including company harassment and intimidation of employees who wish to unionize. African-American workers at the company's Olive Branch, Mississippi plant have filed multiple complaints of racial discrimination. In June, Democratic presidential candidate John Kerry sent a letter to the CEO of the company asking that they respect the right of workers to unionize.
8 states filed a lawsuit in Manhattan's federal district court this week against this country's biggest power plant polluters. American Electric Power, Synergy, the Southern Company, the Tennessee Valley Authority, and Xcel Energy operate over 170 power plants emitting 646 million tons of carbon dioxide each year. The states aren't seeking monetary damages for the serious threats to their citizens' health, economy, and environment that nitrogen and sulfur emissions create. Rather, they want power plants to drastically cut toxic emissions.
Greek paramedics, ambulance drivers, hotel workers, and bus drivers aren't looking for the gold during the Olympics. They just want a bonus. Labor groups in Athens have threatened to go on strike during the games unless their extra effort is given recognition. Police and other security forces have been offered bonuses up to the equivalent of $3,000 American.
Add another 1,200 jobs to the millions lost under the Bush administration because this week, automaker Mitsubishi Motors announced the elimination of half the shifts at its only U.S. assembly plant. Mitsubishi has lost more than 26% in sales, and it says the cuts are necessary to maintain profitability.
Here's today's Dow Bob Report. American economic growth depends on investment by businesses, and corporate profits are soaring. So why are major U.S. companies hoarding cash? According to Business Week, 374 of the companies in the S&P 500 stock index have some $556 billion in cash stashed away. That's up 11% from last year. In the last 4 years, corporate cash reserves have tripled. Much of that money is ending up in money market funds, where it earns a whopping 1% for its corporate investor and does nothing to create new jobs.
You've been listening to WIN, the Workers' Independent News Service. For more information, visit laborradio.org.
You put in 30 years at the company. You got good pay, health care. Then they send you a job overseas. And under George Bush, the company actually gets a tax break for doing it. Now, Bush says we're in recovery. And after a year, you finally land another job. And you wonder, is this what you worked your whole life for? We're not being led. We're being misled.
Take the A-Train. Ride that Wabash Cannonball. Hear the clickety-clack of the Orange Blossom Special. Trains are more than a part of our history. They're a rich part of our culture. But are they a part of our future? I'm not talking here about the enormous potential of long-distance trains, upgrading Amtrak and building a top-of-the-line high-speed train system between our population centers. Rather, I'm focused today on the promise of rail travel within our great metro areas. I've ridden these local systems in the Bay Area, Chicago, Washington, D.C., and elsewhere. They're simple, handy, efficient, fast, inexpensive, and a joyous way to get to where you're going. They also move hundreds of thousands of people a day without creating traffic jams or smog. And they create thousands of good jobs at good wages. Here's what one observer says. Mass transit is an excellent substitute for roads. These are not the words of some anti-auto Earth Firster, but of Paul Wyrick, an icon of right-wing thinking. To him, urban train systems make all kinds of sense and are a legitimate focus for federal, state, and local spending. Public demand for these systems is strong. Ridership is up 21% in the last 5 years. New systems in Dallas, Denver, Salt Lake City, and elsewhere are exceeding expectations, and there's a backlog of 200 local transit projects seeking federal matching funds. There's the problem. The Bushites, tagged by Wyrick as the most anti-rail administration in our country's history of mass transit, is trying to gut federal support. In their zeal for fiscal conservatism, writes Wyrick, they are prepared to scuttle one of the most successful government programs of all time. This is Jim Hightower saying, Missing the Train, a new report by the Sierra Club, highlights projects in Tampa Bay, Portland, Houston, Milwaukee, and elsewhere endangered by Bush's cuts. Get a copy, 202-675-7915.
LendingTree.com presents How to Get Out from Under Debt. First, take an average guy.
Hello.
Then add some credit card debt, a car payment, and a student loan.
How?
To get out from under all this debt, get a debt consolidation loan from LendingTree.com, where banks compete and you choose the loan that's right for you. Call 1-800-555-TREE. That's 1-800-555-TREE. When banks compete, you win at LendingTree.com.
Equal housing opportunity. Some restrictions may apply. See website for details.
38%.
46%.
42%.
I cut my payments in half.
How much can you cut your monthly student loan payments by refinancing with College Loan Corporation? To find out, just call 1-800-2-COLLEGE. You'll quickly be connected to an expert loan consultant who will answer your questions and tell you how you can cut your monthly payment by up to 50% by refinancing your federal student loans at rates as low as 2.63%. 1-800-2-COLLEGE. It's the smartest call you can make.
He's the man who uncovers corporate lies, exposes political corruption, and has a clear vision of what America could become. Here's Tom Hartman.
Rama Schneider in for Tom Hartman on the Tom Hartman Radio Show, brought to you by Small Dog Electronics, 1-800-511-MAX, 1-800-511-6227. I'm also the incompetent boob that can't get out to a commercial on time, but what the heck, that's all about me. Okay, enough about me. Taking time out of her very busy life to spend a little bit of time educating all of us out here in Radio La La Land, we have Sybil Edmonds on the phone. Hello, Ms. Edmonds.
Hi, how are you, Tom?
I'm Rama, actually. You unfortunately, you got the second stringer today, and we apologize for that, but I'm the best he could do.
Well, thank you for inviting me to your show.
Oh, it's great. Actually, I'm quite honored to have you on the phone with us. I happen to have been following your story with varying degrees of interest. Actually, no, with interest the whole time. Just, you know, I mean, it's a story that seems to come and go out of the press, you know, from month to month. Sometimes your name pops up, other times it disappears. So with that said, Sybil, if I could get you to introduce yourself and why it is that you're speaking out publicly and what it is you're speaking publicly about.
Yes, I started working for the FBI on September 20th, 2001, about 10 days after 9/11. And starting from October, November 2001, I started reporting serious issues and blocking of serious investigations to the FBI internally.
Right.
And finally, I got to the point that I had to take this up to the Senate Judiciary Committee and the Department of Justice's Inspector General.
Right.
FBI, during their meetings with the Senate Judiciary Committee in June and July 2002, confirmed all my allegations and they denied none. And Senator Grassley has already stated this publicly.
Yep.
However, in March 2002, after I reported these issues to the Senate, I was terminated, and that's the term they are using because they don't want to admit that they fired me.
You were terminated?
They are saying that they terminated me purely for the government's convenience.
Well, it was convenient, wasn't it?
Well, actually, they thought so.
Oh, okay.
And then per Senate Judiciary Committee's request, the Department of Justice's Inspector General's Office expedited their investigation on these issues that's been already confirmed by the Bureau. And they promised to have a report out to the public by fall 2002.
Yep.
And here we are, summer 2004. This issue was has been fought relentlessly, both by my attorneys and myself. And finally, they released the report 2 weeks ago. However, they classified the entire report. Also, in past 3 months, they blocked all court procedures, citing diplomatic relations and certain foreign relations sensitivities.
Correct.
Also, they gagged the Congress, saying that they are not allowed to discuss my case. They cannot even say what languages I speak. and basically, here we are. And now this report, which was basically the last channel that had not been pursued, and now this report is out.
It's the 9/11 Commission report you're talking about.
Yes.
Okay. Now, just as more bona fide, Sybil mentioned. Now, how, the first name pronunciation. It's Sybil or Sybil?
Sybil. Correct.
Sybil. I'm sorry.
No problem.
Sybil. Now, of course, Senator Grassley on 60 Minutes. To quote him, this is a quote of, and he's a Republican senator from Iowa. Quote: "She's credible." And the reason I feel she's very credible is because people within the FBI have corroborated a lot of her story. Okay. With that said, now, and I also guess we do need to specify that you are on certain restrictions as far as what you can say and what topics you can talk about publicly, correct?
Correct. Attorney General Ashcroft on October 18, 2002, invoked state secret privilege. It's a rarely invoked privilege,
right,
basically gagging me on my case.
Now, has this, other than the fact, of course, they did just recently block your lawsuit for declassifying some of the documents that you wanted to bring out to verify what you were saying. Has this, though, your restrictions on what you can say, has it hampered your ability to get your message out, or have you been able to work around it?
I have been working around this within the restriction without being able to talk about the specifics in
right.
terms of specific targets or specific field offices. I have been talking, and they have not gagged me to the state on that.
Okay. So
however, as you are aware, they have gagged the Congress, and they have stopped the courts from pursuing it, and also they have classified the IG report entirely.
Right, and as far as I can tell, we're still being broadcast, so it must be okay at this moment, too. What is, in the broadest, or actually in the most specific language that you can use without getting yourself in trouble, Sybil, what is it that you want to say about the events leading up to September, the attacks of September 11th, 2001, that we're not being told?
Yes, several specific incidents and issues. One had to do with certain specific information that the Bureau received before 9/11, and since I was involved in retranslating because some of these were previously translated,
right,
documents and audio that had specific information regarding 9/11,
yep,
and some of them dated back to as early as April 2001. Other issues involve certain investigation and information were prevented from being transferred from counterintelligence to counterterrorism, regardless of their direct involvement with the terrorism issues.
Okay.
Just simply due to protecting certain foreign business relations and certain diplomatic relations, and they are not naming countries, and they are not naming these semi-legit organizations.
And we're talking to Sabella Edmonds. She worked with the FBI as a translator up until a couple of years ago. And she's, I guess, falls under the heading of a whistleblower, although certainly hasn't received the legal status of whistleblower, I guess. The 9/11, let me start with the Senate Intelligence Committee. They just came out with a report a little bit ago. Were your concerns addressed anyway with the Senate Intelligence Committee report, Sabella?
No, because as you know, they also go through these classifications.
Right.
And none of this information in terms of these specific cases and incidents were covered by the Senate Intelligence Report. And the reasoning also, another reason for it has been that, okay, there is an IG investigation and we are going to wait for IG investigations to issue their final report.
Right.
Which, as you know, it is not being really issued to the public.
Right. Well, it's been issued to a dark, deep shelf somewhere that we won't see.
Yes, absolutely.
The 9/11 Commission report, of course, just came out yesterday already, isn't it? Did that directly address any of your concerns?
Absolutely not. And not only mine, but also I'm aware of other translators and other FBI, senior FBI agents who went to them, to the commission, 9/11 Commission, and provided them with very, very specific information. I did it myself. I went to brief them in February 2004 for 3.5 hours, tape
right.
recorded. And they did not have much. They just had a few sentences mentioning the severe problems within the translation units and mentioning this IG report again. And
right.
that was basically it.
Right. Now, I don't know how much you can answer the question I'm going to ask, but your concerns, they appear to me, from what I've read over the various news articles, is that they appear to go to what was known or what wasn't known prior to the actual attacks of September 11th. And my understanding from what I read is that you have seen materials, and this is certainly not something you told me. This is what I've gotten from news reports. You have seen materials that indicate that a lot more and much more specific warnings were available. I mean, are you able to answer that in any way?
Yes. As I said, there were several specific information. One of them actually came in April 2001. Another one, end of July 2001, that contained specific information regarding the terrorist activities. And I say specific information, and I also would say from very reliable sources, because one of these cases involved information received from a reliable asset FBI informant
right.
who had been working for the Bureau for at least 10 years.
Okay. Now, your case to release the documents, is that the only lawsuit you had going against the government, the one they just dismissed?
Oh, no. We have had another lawsuit based on the First Amendment, because the gagging and preventing me from disclosing this information violates my First Amendment rights. Also, we had a FOIA case under the Freedom of Information Act
right.
to publicize certain documents and receive it so that we can make it public. Also, I have been subpoenaed by attorneys representing 9/11 victim family members, and they also quashed that subpoena. And the reason they cited was to protect certain diplomatic and foreign relations.
Okay, so that's the same reasoning that was given in this one that the judge threw out early this month.
Correct.
Okay, they said that, boy, the information would be embarrassing and reveal sources of information, I guess. What's the status of the First Amendment and the Freedom of Information suits?
Well, we are we're appealing both cases, and we're going to be filing our motion for the First Amendment within the next 2 months.
Right.
And it's going to be a time-consuming process. It's not going to happen very soon. However, meanwhile, we are pressing the Senate and commission. This is not the 9/11 commission, but the Inspector
Senate.
General's office.
Oh, okay. The IG
report. To release this report, or at least part of this report, to the public.
Man, I'll tell you, I wish I could cause as much grief for our government as you have, Sibel. I mean, it seems like you walk around and people start to get nervous and they get really sweaty under the armpits and stuff and go, oh, no, we're going to have to tell the truth if we let her keep going.
They have had this relentless effort to cover up these facts.
Yeah. Well, I really, as an individual, I want to thank you so much for being out there trying to bring this stuff to light, because in my mind, if you want to protect democracy and our constitutional republic form of government, you don't make us more like the people we're calling the evildoers, and as you make us more open and a free type of people. There's also a lawsuit now by the what's that, POGO? I'm trying to think of what the acronym stands.
Project on Government Oversight. It's a nonprofit government watchdog organization.
Are you connected with that one in any way, or is that totally separate from you?
That's a totally separate lawsuit. However, the reason they brought this suit against the government was the fact that government tried to gag, and they gagged the United States Congress, and reclassified retroactively information that had been available to the public for 2 years.
Okay, so we're coming up on a hard break. Can I get you to hold on for a few minutes and just spend another 5 minutes with us?
Absolutely.
Thank you.
I guess I better let the dog in.
Like the small dog that rules the house, Small Dog Electronics is a small computer company that really rules when it comes to customer service. Small Dog Electronics is your authorized Apple reseller in Wakefield, Vermont. Sure, you can buy your computer out of a catalog, but how do you know you're really getting what you want or what you need? At Small Dog, they don't work on commission. Their only motivation is making sure you're a happy customer. Put your business on the leading edge with the world's fastest computer, the new Macintosh G5. You'll finish the job ahead of the pack, and automatic security updates lock out viruses. That's speed and dependability that will keep you focused on your customers instead of sitting on hold with tech support.
I guess you want to get on the couch, huh?
Like the small dog who everybody makes room for, Small Dog Electronics is big on customer service. Small Dog Electronics. Check them out on the web at smalldog.com or at their showroom on Route 100 in Waitsfield.
No way. You're not getting on the bed.
I'm sorry, there's nothing more we can do. No one wants to hear those devastating words from a doctor. But that's what millions of Americans suffering from diseases like Alzheimer's, Parkinson's, and diabetes will be told if you vote for Ralph Nader. Americans who voted for Nader put Bush in the White House in 2000. As president, George W. put the brakes on embryonic stem cell research, which could lead to revolutionary new treatments and cures. John Kerry vows to push this research forward. George W. Bush is still taking orders from the religious right. He wants to stifle stem cell research. This time, don't help him. Don't vote for Ralph. The Committee for the Advancement of Stem Cell Research approved this message. It was not approved by any candidate, nor any candidate's committee. Visit CASCR.org.
For more than 27 years, the progressive magazine In These Times has provided groundbreaking coverage of movements for social, environmental, and economic justice. Author and broadcast personality Studs Terkel calls In These Times his bi-weekly tonic. In These Times features award-winning reporting and analysis of national and international news. Find In These Times on your newsstand or visit us online at www.inthesetimes.com or call 1-800-827-0270. 1-800-827-0270.
Hey, what does this word make you think of? Tchaikovsky.
Gesundheit.
So what's the word?
No, that is the word.
You lost me.
All right, who's Martha Graham?
She invented the graham cracker. Before her, there was only soda crackers.
Maybe they're not getting enough art. Kids who participate in the arts do better in school and in life. To learn more, visit AmericansForTheArts.org. Because all kids should get to appreciate Tchaikovsky's music and Martha Graham's dance. Art. Ask for more. A public service message brought to you by Americans for the Arts and the Ad Council.
Are George Bush's policies getting you down? Have you had enough of Bush's messianic militarism? Does John Ashcroft's assault on the Bill of Rights scare you? Do you believe that Dick Cheney had his conscience surgically removed 3 decades ago? Are you angry at the Iraq fiasco that was the brainchild of Deputy Secretary of Defense Paul out of his Wolfowitz? Well, then subscribe to the Progressive magazine. You'll get the insights of Barbara Ehrenreich, the inspiration of Howard Zinn, and the mirth of Molly Ivins, Will Durst, and Kate Clinton. They'll help you survive this dark age. And check this out. You can subscribe today for only $12 for 12 monthly issues. Simply get on the web and go to www.progressive.org or call 1-800-827-0555 and mention offer radio. That's 1-800-827-0555 and mention the radio offer from the Tom Hartman Program. That's the Progressive. It's your antidote to reactionary policies.
This is the Tom Hartman Program.
All right, welcome back to the Tom Hartman Radio Show. Rama Schneider sitting in for Tom Hartman for the rest of the day, and kind enough to join us on the phone for a while is Sibel Edmonds. She's a former FBI translator and now an FBI whistleblower, I guess we could put it as. And once again, thank you very much for joining us, Ms. Edmonds.
Thank you.
Just a couple of questions here, and then I have one that's kind of personal, not overly personal, but I'm kind of interested in this having to do with the languages you speak. But
sure.
On a scale of 1 to 10, how vital is it that the public know what you know and you're not allowed to tell us?
Definite answer, 10.
It's a 10. It's that important. What do you think the odds are on these other cases, the First Amendment and your Freedom of Information suits going through, or do you expect them to be kind of quashed by the same process they're using now, which is it'll endanger national security?
Well, I believe to a certain degree it's going to depend on this upcoming election, unfortunately. And I don't believe it's going to be the right channel to get this information out.
Okay, so you think it's probably going to have to be done through the Congress then?
Absolutely. It's their job.
Okay, so then for people that are interested in being able to hear what's so important that you have to say, then it's probably would be good for us to contact our congresspeople and to say to them, hey, let's see the reports, the IG report and stuff then.
Absolutely.
Okay. Do you have a website or some way for public to contact you if they want to, Sibel?
No, I don't have a website, but they can find a lot of information. You would see many alternative media sources providing information, background information. Actually, many of them are right now displaying those Senate letters that have been classified, reclassified.
Right.
And that is very good to see.
Yep.
Seeing that people are challenging these types of anti-democratic, anti-constitutional moves.
Yeah.
And people who recognize that our system is basically broken. I mean, we are supposed to be moving based on this notion of separation of powers and system of checks and balances. Here you have an attorney general that can go and gag the Congress illegally.
Yep.
And stop courts, our judicial branch, and get away with it.
Yeah.
This is not what our system is supposed to be about.
Absolutely. I 100% agree with you on that. So actually, folks on the Internet, if you went and put Sibel Edmonds, that's S-I-B-E-L-E-D-M-O-N-D-S, if you put that in quote marks on any web search machine, you're bound to come up with a whole lot of hits. Now, where were you born, Ms. Edmonds?
I was born in Iran, but I'm a Turkish. I used to be a Turkish citizen because my parents, they were both Turkish, but my father had a job transfer in Iran. And I grew up in Turkey, Istanbul, and I speak Farsi, Turkish, and Azerbaijani. There you have all this classified information.
Farsi, Turkish, and Azerbaijani.
Yes, Azerbaijani. Wow.
Now, I'm sure you don't speak those on a normal rule, or maybe you do. I don't know. I live in Vermont, where we have a hard time speaking English to each other as a first language. How do you keep up with those languages? Is there a trick to it? Are you engaged in using them every day, or what?
Yes, you're absolutely right. In terms of practicing in conversation, I don't have much opportunity to do that. However, when I wake up in the morning and I go to my computer to check the news for that day, I regularly read 3 Turkish newspapers, 2-3 Iranian papers, and some Azerbaijani sources. And then, of course, I read all the papers here in the United States. And that basically helps because, yeah, first of all, you are able to receive news from different countries.
Right.
Need a different perspective on what's going on. And as you know, our media here, they are not doing a great job lately.
Surprise, surprise.
And also, it helps me maintain these languages up to date.
Now, you're an American citizen now, correct?
Yes, I have lived here for 17 years in Old Town Alexandria, Virginia, and I have been married for 12 years.
Well,
I became citizen in 1995.
Well, Sibel, we're coming up on the we got a clock out of here for a hard break, so I really want to thank you so much for spending time with us. And I wish you the best of luck, and thank you for standing up for all of us.
Thank you.
And you have a great day.
You too.
Yes, ma'am.
Bye-bye.
Rama Schneider in for Tom Hartman.
At last, there's a positive focus on a condition that affects millions. Read The Edison Gene, ADHD and the Gift of the Hunter Child by Tom Hartman, best-selling author of Attention Deficit Disorder, A Different Perception. John Rady, author of User's Guide to the Brain, says this about the Edison Gene.
Once again, with tireless scholarship and a bit of poetry, Tom Hartman helps take us to the edge of knowing ourselves, our brains, and our world.
The Edison Gene, available in bookstores everywhere.
Pop and not so pop culture, democracy and the news of the day. This is the Tom Hartman Program.
You're listening to WIN, the Workers' Independent News Service. I'm Jesse Russell.
And I'm Sarah Turner.
The union seeking to organize a printing plant in Kentucky has alleged the company is sickening and maiming employees. The Graphic Communication International Union has filed a complaint with the Kentucky Labor Authorities against Canadian-based Quebecor World. The complaint says that the employees at the Versailles plant are exposed to toxic chemicals, fire hazards, and unsafe machinery with inadequate guards. In addition, workers have filed more than 50 charges of unfair labor practices, including company harassment and intimidation of employees who wish to unionize. African-American workers at the company's Olive Branch, Mississippi plant have filed multiple complaints of racial discrimination. In June, Democratic presidential candidate John Kerry sent a letter to the CEO of the company asking that they respect the right of workers to unionize.
8 states filed a lawsuit in Manhattan's federal district court this week against this country's biggest power plant polluters. American Electric Power, Synergy, the Southern Company, the Tennessee Valley Authority, and Xcel Energy operate over 170 power plants emitting 646 million tons of carbon dioxide each year. The states aren't seeking monetary damages for the serious threats to their citizens' health, economy, and environment that nitrogen and sulfur emissions create. Rather, they want power plants to drastically cut toxic emissions.
Greek paramedics, ambulance drivers, hotel workers, and bus drivers aren't looking for the gold during the Olympics. They just want a bonus. Labor groups in Athens have threatened to go on strike during the games unless their extra effort is given recognition. Police and other security forces have been offered bonuses up to the equivalent of $3,000 American.
Add another 1,200 jobs to the millions lost under the Bush administration because this week, automaker Mitsubishi Motors announced the elimination of half the shifts at its only U.S. assembly plant. Mitsubishi has lost more than 26% in sales, and it says the cuts are necessary to maintain profitability.
Here's today's Dow Bob Report. American economic growth depends on investment by businesses, and corporate profits are soaring. So why are major U.S. companies hoarding cash? According to Businessweek, 374 of the companies in the S&P 500 stock index have some $556 billion in cash stashed away. That's up 11% from last year. In the last 4 years, corporate cash reserves have tripled. Much of that money is ending up in money market funds, where it earns a whopping 1% for its corporate investor and does nothing to create new jobs.
You've been listening to WIND, the Workers' Independent News Service. For more information, visit laborradio.org.
This is the Democracy Zone with Tom Hartman.
Took all the trees and put them in a tree museum.
Yell, brother.
Charge the people a dollar and a half to see them.
Hold on, I got to shuck and jive for a moment here. All right, enough shucking and jive. What? I like that. They pay paradise. All right, I'll stop singing. Don't turn off the radio. I'm done singing, okay? Rama Schneider in for Tom Hartman on the Tom Hartman Radio Show. Hey, folks, 1-866-889-8894. And, come in and join the conversation for a while. You only got a half hour to do this, and we'll try to get through whoever does call. I'm looking at this piece of paper, though, in front of me. I think I'm supposed to do it. It says, sponsors mention every hour. I'm not sure. Well, I'm going to take my chances and mention them. The Committee for the Advancement of Stem Cell Research, visit www.cascr.org. That's cascr.org for the Committee for the Advancement of Stem Cell Research. For a free audio from futurist Benjamin Cream. Actually, I should give this. I love listening to futurists generally. I like to hear what they say. And I have no idea what the free audio is, by the way. It could be a bunch of chickens clucking or dogs barking, you know. But anyway, I shouldn't say that. I'm sorry, Mr. Cream. For a free audio from futurist Benjamin Cream. And seriously, though, this is a number I'm going to write down. 888-242-8272. 888-242-8272. Let me write that down. And then Small Dog Electronics, that's the one I managed to mention. Small Dog Electronics at 1-800-511-MAX. That's 1-800-511-6227. And mention once a day, just in case Tom didn't. In These Times, if you want to subscribe to In These Times, 1-800-827-7270, 1-800-827-7270. The Progressive, you'll get 12 months for just $12. What a deal. If you mention radio when you call them at 1-800-827-0555, that's if you mention radio when you call the Progressive at 1-800-827-0555, and 12 months for $12. Let me see. How much a month does that come out to? 12 divided by 12 times the square root of 4 minus 3 divided by 6. That's $1 a month. That's a pretty darn good deal. Man, that's a lot of good stuff. And, all right. Well, anyway, hey. I went in and made a recording of my barn this morning, but I'm not going to play it without special request. What we'll do, we got people on the phone. I got some things I want to talk about. We may or may not get to it. So let's just head to the phone lines, and we'll start with Chris in New Mexico. Hey, Chris, come on and sit down. Tell us what's on your mind, brother.
Hey, brother. Live copy's fun, isn't it? Uh-huh. I always love live copy.
Yeah, I should not make side comments about sponsors, though, and Tom should beat me up for that one. And
oh, what the heck? They're just sponsors.
I apologize to Mr. Cream, and it's one I'm seriously going to call, 888-242-8272, because I am genuinely interested in that sort of discussion.
As well, we all should, because we have to promote the program. We have to.
Sure.
Interesting thing, fascinating thing that I heard on the CNN news at the top of the last hour. The Bush administration, through the FBI, is putting out the idea that, quote, domestic radicals, end quote, whatever that means, are going to attack the press at the Democratic National Convention.
We're going to call them names.
The news story said that these domestic radicals, quote unquote, might use explosives against media broadcast vans and media gathering places. And the only thing I can work out is this is a blatant attempt to alter press coverage. To try to make the press fearful of doing their jobs, or perhaps it serves to make the public fearful of the press, to keep the public distant from media concentrations at that gathering. But it's just a bizarre story, and I don't for a minute believe it. Isn't that weird? The government's saying something, and I don't believe them.
I find that extraordinarily weird. I don't know if I can find this, the article. It's funny. I got a big pile of stuff here I'm trying to look through, but it's an article talking about how less coverage Kerry's been getting lately and how much more coverage Bush has been getting and all. But, you know, look, first of all, politics, the people that run political campaigns like Karl Rove, let's reach across the aisle on this, and this is the same with who's ever handling all this stuff for John Kerry. These people are mass media savvy. They know what they're doing. They know who to contact in the media to get desired results. They know which buttons to push. They're doing this. Are they doing it on purpose? I'd say yeah, and I'd say they're doing it to try to get the press to draw back so they won't get up close to the demonstrators and find out that, you know, that ugly old domestic terrorist that they were warned about is really mom with her six-month-old daughter who came down to say, look, I don't want my husband going back to Iraq for another 15 months. Thank you.
Isn't it weird that in the past 20 years anyway, the only ugly domestic terrorists have been right-wing Christians?
No, well, they're not ugly.
Well, Tim McVeigh wasn't a pretty guy, but, you know, another was Randy Nichols.
Tim McVeigh was a closet liberal. That's the only reason he did what he did. And who was that guy who they just hauled out of the mountains down in North Carolina or wherever that was blowing up the women's health clinics. They're women health clinics, all right? They happen to also do abortions, but they do a lot more.
You have a good day, Rama.
Thank you so much for the call, Chris. You have a great one. All right, let's keep on cruising here. Now we're Michael in Santa Fe. Hey, Michael, how you doing?
Yeah, good morning, Rob, or afternoon, where you're at, sorry.
Yes, sir.
It's afternoon here. Great. It's Dan Quayle calling in. Sorry.
Well, actually, Michael, we've outsourced this job to India, so it's the middle of the night.
Yeah, well, we're going to outsource Bush in November. But
yeah,
anyways,
brother.
I was about the Sybil Edmonds. You know what I'm going to do is I'm going to go online and I'm going to find some of those documents that the alternative media organizations have up.
Yep.
I'm going to download them and I'm going to copy them and I'll probably get on the FBI list doing so. But I'm going to go down and next time our congressman holds a town meeting down here, I'm going to go down there and I go, Congressman?
Yep.
And Tom Udall's pretty good. I'm going to go, Congressman, here's this document here and it says this and this and this and it's been retroactively classified. It's been available to the public for 2 months. What's your opinion on that?
There you go.
And I'm going to see if they have any kind, you know, raise Hades like that and see if they have any response for me.
Yeah. Well, you know, look, you bring up a really screwy part of this. And first, before I get into this, I want to stipulate I am not a lawyer. I don't even play one on TV or anywhere, okay?
Right.
I was talking about the project on government oversight lawsuit, which is being handled by a lawyer from Public Citizen, and I can't remember the gentleman's name, but I was talking to the lawyer from Public Citizen about this, and if you remember, Sybil had mentioned that earlier, that was kind of a side lawsuit that she wasn't involved in, but what they're trying to do is have a judge rule that the retroactive classification was illegal because, like she said and that you alluded to, this stuff is already out there in the public. You can't retroactively classify something that's already out in the public domain from what I was told that the law says. So what's interesting is your congressman couldn't hand you that very same document that when you go out and search on the web, and I know they're there, I just don't know which websites, I haven't looked around for a bit, but when you find them, you'll be able to hand documents to your congressman that he could not hand to you for some dumb reason. You get it?
That's good.
Yeah.
Got it.
It's not illegal for you to have them. It's illegal for your congressman to disseminate the information, for the government in any way to disseminate the information, and it's illegal for Sybil Edmonds to talk about the information, you know. But we can, you know. There's a lot of, and when you do it, remember, it's Sybil, S-I-B-E-L, and then Edmonds is E-D-M-O-N-D-S.
So Sybil, S-I-B-E-L. Okay, got it. Well, thanks, Ram. I just want to make that point. I was kind of wondering if they'd haul me off to jail if I do that.
No, as far as I know, you're on the up and up when you do it that way, Mike.
Okay, thanks.
Of course, if you end up in jail, I'm not bailing you out, brother.
Right. Yeah, Ram Snyder said he'd bail me out. Call him in Vermont, right?
Take a deep breath.
Yeah, he's a very rich man right now.
Oh, yeah. I'm still trying to outsource my old lady. All right. Thanks a lot, Michael. All right, 1-866-889-8894. We do have a little bit more time to spend with the lovely listening audience. I have not read the 9/11 Commission report yet, so I really don't have a lot to say about it specifically. And I prefer to actually read these reports. I found how enlightening it is. For instance, reading the Butler report over in Britain, that's the one that deals with the intelligence or lack of as far as the Blair government was concerned. And, of course, our Senate Intelligence Committee report here. I've read those. And what I find so enlightening is essentially everybody saying that, boy, it lets the president and the prime minister off the hook. I say quite the opposite if you read the words in those. And I don't want to get into those too much right now. I'll just leave it as an assertion. It makes fingers point right at the leadership of both countries, not just the president, but also their respective cabinets and also our Congress and the Parliament over in Britain. You know, massive failure on a lot of people's part. And from what I understand, listening to people talk about the 9/11 Commission report and having, when I say skim it, I mean skim. Believe me, I didn't stop. I went and did a search for particular words out of interest. Imagination was one of them. Because it gets to this thing like this you said, oh, we had a great failure in imagination. Okay, now I want to take everybody, we're going to do a little regressive technique here. Everybody regress to your childhood. When I snap my finger, you're going to be 5 years old. Okay, we're all 5 years old, and we just did something really stupid, like we wanted to see what would happen if we push this glass off the table. We push the glass off the table, it falls down, and it breaks all over the floor, and in comes Mommy. And Mommy's standing there looking 50 feet tall to us little 5 years old and sternly staring down goes, Rama, you fill in your own name there, Rama, why did you do that? And you look up there with snot coming out of your nose and your lips quivering and the eyes getting red and you go, I don't know. I don't know. You know, that's, I got to tell you, when I hear them say, we suffered from a lack of imagination, you know what they're essentially saying is Bush and Blair sat there in their respective offices and kind of standing there clumsily with one foot stepping over the other foot and looking at the floor, and they were being asked by their fellow countrymen, hey, Tony, hey, George, why did you invade Iraq? And they're going, I don't know. I'm not sure. I didn't have any imagination that these things would happen. Or getting caught flat-footed with the attacks of September 11th, 2001. Now, I want you to remember, we were just talking to Ms. Sybil Edmonds, and she was working in the FBI and was, you know, they say that nobody was raising alerts about this stuff. Well, BS, we just talked to one, and she just hung up 15 minutes ago. So there were people raising alerts. So when they say that they didn't have any imagination, there was a serious lack of imagination on everybody's part, that's not true. What they're doing, that's a fancy way of saying the people at the top, the decision makers, the folks who are supposed to provide the guidance, the people that run this country, and in particular, in a very bipartisan fashion, I am pointing at the administration and I am pointing at the Congress. These folks failed. They failed us, ladies and gentlemen. As a cross the board, they failed us. They failed us because, A, George Bush, and yeah, I don't know, you want to take it back to Clinton, I'll argue with that. I think Clinton took terrorism a lot more seriously than he's given credit for. I read too many articles, and I paid too much attention to what he was saying in the 90s. But the Bush administration, and okay, I won't argue for now. You want to say to Clinton, I don't care. The administration ignored the warning signs. When everybody's hair was on fire, according to everybody, you know, Bush went on vacation. You know, so the 9/11 Commission's answer to all this, of course, one of their big ones is, hey, guys, get some imagination, which basically means, hey, guys, actually, like, do your job and think about what you're trying to do there, Mr. and Mrs. D.C. politician. The 9/11 Commission's answer, of course, being that, well, what we'll do now, we will make this super intelligence czar who will sit there and be a cabinet member and will be a point of interaction for all the intelligence gathering agencies. This points to a bigger issue. We have somebody in the Oval Office right now whose job, he's been paid $240,000 a year or something. He's been given this nice house and these fancy cars and this humongous plane to fly around in. His job is to sit down at those cabinet tables and bring all this information together and make sure that the information is good. And he's supposed to be going around to alternative sources of information. And you know what? So was Congress. You know why Congress went along with everything the Bush administration said? Because the Congress took whatever the Bush administration handed them and said, oh, yeah, oh, boy, that looks good. Oh, yeah, I'll go with that. I'll go with that. This is why they all look so stupid. And this is why the 9/11 Commission and the Senate Intelligence Committee report, both of them say nobody did their job because nobody in Congress, nobody in the administration branch of our government did their job prior to September 11, 2001. And then they didn't do their job afterwards. If they had done their job before the attacks, we might have been able to thwart the attacks. If they did their jobs after the attacks, they would have realized, we don't need to be invading Iraq. Iraq had nothing to do with it. Iraq never attacked the United States of America. Not since 1987, but that was okay. That was when they were there, our buddies. Robin Schneider and for Tom Hartman, we'll be back.
How can there be hope when millions starve in a world of plenty? How can there be justice when the rich parade their wealth before the poor? How can there be peace when each man is his neighbor's enemy? In a world of chaos, peace is possible, but only if we address the root causes of our global crisis, poverty, hunger, and despair. We must share the world's resources to create justice. Without justice, there can be no peace. Fortunately, we're not alone in our efforts. According to futurist Benjamin Krem, a group of enlightened teachers led by Maitreya, the world teacher, is here to inspire a new approach based on the principle of sharing. With their guidance, we can transform the world and create a peaceful future for all. For a free audio CD of an extraordinary lecture by Benjamin Krem on the emergence of the teachers, call toll-free 888-242-8272. Again, that's 888-242-8272.
The Founding Fathers thought they'd stop corporations from ever overthrowing elected government. Little did they know that 200 years later, democracy would be stolen and twisted in the name of so-called conservative values. Hi, this is Tom Hartman. The Founders of America fought the Revolutionary War against the excessive corporate power of the East India Company, and presidents from Jefferson to Eisenhower warned us that extremely big businesses could destroy democracy. You'll find this extraordinary American story in my book, Unequal Protection, The Rise of Corporate Dominance and the Theft of Human Rights. It starts with the Boston Tea Party and ends with the rampant corruption of the Bush administration. It tells the dramatic story of how corporations hijacked the Bill of Rights, setting the stage for the CEO takeover of America. And it shows how we can take America back and tells the stories of Americans from Pennsylvania to California who are doing just that right now.
Unequal Protection is available in bookstores nationwide. And you can read several chapters online at unequalprotection.com. That's Unequal Protection by Tom Hartman.
Are you or a loved one making too many trips to the bathroom? Listen closely because you're not alone. Over 30 million men suffer from an enlarged prostate. That's why if you make frequent trips to the bathroom, have urgency, hesitancy, or a diminished sex drive, then Super Prostate Formula is for you. It was designed by nationally recognized physician Dr. Michael Toplitzky. The results with his patients have been amazing. Reclaim control now and join the thousands of satisfied customers who have had incredible results with Super Prostate Formula. When you order two bottles of Dr. Toplitzky's Super Prostate Formula, you'll also get two bottles of his Super Libido Formula, an all-natural alternative to Viagra to enhance sexual vitality and performance, plus his book, Complete Guide to Prostate Health, and his newsletter, a total $100 value free as your gift. Guaranteed or your money back. If you're not completely satisfied, return it for a full refund and keep his Libido Formula book and newsletter free as your gift. Not available. Call now, 800-452-0978. 800-452-0978. That's 800-452-0978.
With the Workers' Independent News Service, I'm Sarah Turner, bringing you today's feature story. 49 New Jersey environmental groups in the Save New Jersey Coalition are urging Governor James McGreevy to veto the so-called Fast Track Development Bill. The bill would grant developers fast approvals on building permits. Rebecca Miles reports.
The coalition claims the bill is unconstitutional as it radically changes the permitting system in New Jersey, and many see it as railroading 30 years of environmental protection. I asked Jeff Tittle, director of New Jersey's Sierra Club, what the bill would do if passed.
It allows developers and polluters to be able to have fast-track approval for permitting from DEP and other agencies, including transportation. And what it really means is that in that 45-day clock, the public has no right to comment on permits that may affect their lives and their property and their public and their health.
What many are angry about is that this comes after a long battle to get Governor McGreevy to preserve the highland area around New Jersey's state reservoirs. I asked Thomas Borden from the Rutgers Environmental Law Clinic what he saw as a typical example of how this bill would infringe people's constitutional rights.
There's many areas in New Jersey where development or redevelopment has not occurred because the area is contaminated and is under the jurisdiction of DEP to remediate that site.
What the coalition uncovered in the bill were 12 counts of violation against constitutional rights, to include threats to public health, safety, and public property. They have brought this to the attention of Governor McGreevy. The governor has 45 days to veto or pass the bill, and cannot pass a bill that is considered unconstitutional. For the Workers' Independent News Service, I'm Rebecca Miles in New York.
This is the Tom Hartman Program.
Stop it. Hey, welcome back. Tom Hartman Radio Show. Rama Schneider in for Tom Hartman. Yeah, brother. Coming up to the top of the hour. More than 10,000 rollover-related deaths each year. That's according to a newspaper article from the Auto Insider, DetroitNews.com. Ford is going to offer anti-rollover device for SUVs in 2005. What first attracted me to this one, this morning I had to go take care of some business. I was out driving around in my SUV, and I had on the top of the news there, 5 minutes, CBS News, I think it was, comes out, quick little blurb. And they come out with a news article there that after hundreds of lawsuits, Ford Motor Company will be making anti-rollover technology standard on SUVs. Okay, now you get that? After hundreds of lawsuits, Ford will be making anti-rollover technology standard on SUVs. Now, let me get back to what I read there. Rollovers are especially deadly, even though they represent a small fraction of all vehicle crashes, about 3% But there are more than 10,000 rollover-related deaths each year, representing about one-third of all passenger vehicle deaths. You know what? That little SOB with John Edwards, that trial lawyer dirtball John, how dare people like John Edwards go out there and handle these blood-sucking lawsuits that are going to save maybe 10,000 lives in rollover accidents? What kind of dirtball is John Edwards anyway? Actually out there, you know, he used to do that. He used to go out and take cases for people, and he used to actually take a cut of the settlement. Can you believe? Thank God the chief executive officers of the United States of America don't do. I mean, thank God Dick Cheney didn't. Do you think Dick Cheney, he wouldn't take a cut of the profits of Halliburton? Oh, no, wait a minute. He did. Darn. Well, I'll have to think of something else here. George Bush, he wouldn't pass a tax cut knowing that he's going to get a big chunk of tax break. Oh, wait a minute. He did that, too. So how the heck can they yell about John Edwards going out there and helping to save 10,000 lives? Oh, but he gets rich off of it. The dirt ball. Rama Schneider in for Tom Hartman. Everybody have a good day. Thank you for everybody that helped with the show. I got to go.
Been listening to the Tom Hartman program. Check our website at www.tomhartman.com for archives of this program and more information.
While the world seems to be collapsing around us, there is hope. Tom Hartman's inspiring book, The Last Hours of Ancient Sunlight, The Fate of the World and What We Can Do.